Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight. It's 6 minutes into the hour of four, and you know what that means. From four to six, it's your drive time show. Four to seven.
Yes.
4 to 7. Thanks, Dwight.
Please, Helmut. Yeah. Please, don't kneecap us. Yeah. You know what kneecapping is.
On a knock off Ellie.
Hey, man, at least there's clouds in the sky for you if you knock off early.
Oh, yeah, and congratulations to all of us, especially men and babies. I'm not going to explain why, so I'll just leave that there. Turns out, you know, okay, fine. It's
you really had to start our discussion from there.
Well, I'm congratulating us.
It does highlight a month.
Happy breastfeeding month.
That was yesterday, Ahmed. But it does look...
It's the whole week.
The whole week?
Yes, it's the whole week.
Okay, awesome stuff.
Yeah, it's from the first two.
So it started on Saturday.
Yeah, which is actually not a good time to be single. So, talk about marginalization. There it starts.
Yeah, but there is a marginalization, technically. You know, if you look at it from an economic perspective, Helmut, there's also a research, there's also a resource competition taking place there, you know.
Please tell me these cameras are off.
No, they're on. I can see myself, you know, right over there. Welcoming you guys, obviously, you know. Sometimes we don't start these things intentionally. Helmut started intentionally.
I definitely started.
I was caught offside, you know, like an offside striker who doesn't know where the onside line is. But yeah.
Yeah, to those, the health ministry officials that are saying... stop. Anyway. So let's get back to Home Run. Now, we'll cover this topic in detail on Sunday.
Why are you citing? Do you know what I said about that article on the WhatsApp group where these journalists are? I told them, why does that article read like April Fools in August?
It's definitely April Fools. Like,
but the thing is, it starts off with one line, and then that one sentence doesn't connect to the other sentence just below it, not the headline.
Yeah,
the headline, the first line of that article, and then. The next paragraph. They don't disconnect.
Look, it's not about...
They don't connect to each other.
You analyzed that. When it comes to information like that.
Comedy.
I went straight to the comment section. That's where the real comedy is.
Okay.
When I tell you that the ladies are defending us, say, shout out to you guys. You know,
because, okay, thank you.
Thank you guys a lot. They are there asking, did we complain? I was like, my lady, thank you very much.
Yes.
Okay, that enthusiasm is a little overkill, but...
Too much. I know, it's a Tuesday, guys. You'll be wondering, why are we so happy?
Okay, I don't know about you.
I mean, that article just made my day, partially.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You should have heard that at the married men. How the married men were going on. They were actually shocked, you know.
So they must have, maybe they must say, you know, once you, you know, they say a baby, the, you know, they, you in put the in some equation, kind of, you know, term equation. Limit.
Huh?
You put in some kind of term limit. You know how we have, like, you can only be a president for 5 to 10 years and.
What?
The father is in charge until the baby comes along, and then it's the baby until maybe, you know, a year and a half when they are fully grown to go and, you know, find their own girlfriend. Then you come.
1 year old.
1, 2 years. What, okay.
Do babies find girlfriends at 2 years? What kind of babies do you know?
Born free babies that need therapy more than milk. Now, okay.
Okay, yeah. on a serious note.
So, let's talk about the National Statistics Agency's recent, last month, when they when they brought out the marginalization report.
Yeah, that was about 2 weeks back.
Yeah, but you know, it's not the report itself is not based on something entirely new. It's based on the 2023 National Population Census statistics.
Basically, yes. Yeah, but for the most thing, part. They also technically had to update it a little bit.
Definitely, they had to. Otherwise, it would be.
I mean, one of the important things that came out from, okay. In all honesty. I was there specifically recording some content, obviously, for us, primarily, and I provided some of that, and an explainer also to David on the radar that day, and what stems in importantly from that particular event itself was that. They had the data already, but for them to just improve a little bit on the specific groups, where the groups are distributed, and because there is a classification already.
Mm-hmm.
The classification exists. But I actually want to springboard from my specific sort of like departure point, Hamut, in our discussion for today, is Namibia's national designation and description of classified, of marginalized, and the broader description of marginalization in the world.
Yeah.
Namibians know that we have this particular classification, and Namibians know to some degree what this classification basically resembles. So just for the rest of the colleagues to basically understand, or not the colleagues, the listeners to basically understand, is that Namibia has a classification of marginalization that looks ultimately at specific groups in Namibia.
Yeah.
We have not, unfortunately, and that's now obviously on the human rights or civil rights discussion, we have not included, for example, these LGBTQ plus dimension. This is key to understand because everywhere around the world, the LGBTQ plus communities of countries in certain countries, wish
falls under the category of
marginalized, and they wish to be considered under this marginalized label, but it makes things difficult because in some countries, let me cite America for example. America uses a broad brush label known as majority ethnicity and minority ethnicity. Namibia also has the particular scenario, majority ethnicity, minority ethnicities. And it's within the minority ethnicities that you get a further minorities also present. And to describe to you, when Helmut and I looked at the ancestral land claims report back in last month, it's from that perspective that you then got to extrapolate where this understanding also for the marginalized aspect comes from. When you start from there, now I'm just describing scenarios in terms of how Namibia sort of like shapes this conversation. But in essence, where this marginalized discussion came from or popped up from was that ministry that we had. What was that ministry's name? We just mentioned it, right? Poverty Eradication.
Ministry of Gender Equality, Poverty Eradication.
Women's Affairs. But it had a massive name, man.
Yeah.
It was the ministry with the two... With the two deputy ministers, and the deputy minister at that stage for marginalized people was he's a traditional leader of one of the Sun groups, Royal Kututua. I hope I'm saying it correctly. My clicks specifically for that Sun group that the former deputy minister is from, but. He was in charge under President Geingob's first term of that separate directorate. So Namibia has a classification of what marginalized people are. In the broader dictionary descriptions, marginalized means if you have deprived someone of something, or there's been a long-standing deprivation of some sort that has been present for an extended period of time, obviously. But that's one scenario. And if you find yourselves, for example, like in the stemming from the same agency, the NSA's particular own census report and then the labor force report, and then cascading into this, before we get to this report's discussions or definitions, the NSA technically already depicts under the labor force report, Helmut, of 2023, marginalization.
Yeah.
Economic marginalization, which is the particular theme of NDB6's particular mission, how to alleviate economic marginalization. So it's from that particular springboard that I'm starting from. Helmut, you can showcase your springboard. You
know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, definitely.
Besides the breastfeeding dimensions.
No, you know, we'll just reserve that for
which
Sunday.
Which also has a marginalization in it.
Aspect, yeah. Speaking of which, actually,
I knew it. I shouldn't have given you ammo for that one. I knew it.
Come to think of it. Anyway, look, when we talk about the discussion of, when we talk about, just the term marginalization, it's one of those topics that brings up a very interesting conversation, not just, let me just say from experience,
yeah,
here at home. By that I mean here in Namibia. It brings up a very interesting conversation as to what does that mean? And interesting enough, the NSA definition. They say the NSA definition of what that means, and I like that they gave that definition because it brings things home in terms of I would call it a domestic definition of what we mean in Namibia when we talk about when we say marginalization, for example. Like you pointed out, it has to do with deprivation from a certain, not just, let me just say, economic activities, and also certain services that are, that are considered as needs. So when you talk about, when you tie, the discussion around marginalization with deprivation of any sort, especially as it relates to participation in economies,
yeah,
and all other national activities, mostly needs like your health sectors, your health and education services, etc. But why that it becomes a very interesting discussion, and not just in Namibia, I believe, but throughout the SADC region. Pardon me, but also throughout the throughout the African continent is when you talk about deprivation, you really have you have to explain further as to what you mean deprivation, because we just stepped out of colonialism now. Because when you look at it from that from that point, it can easily be argued that unless you were a male and you were white, for the most part, for a very significant part of African history, especially Africa's colonial history,
yeah,
deprivation can be seen in all kinds of groups, which is why I pointed out earlier that I'm glad the NSA gave their own definition of what marginalization means from a Namibian standpoint.
If they follow the ministries.
They follow the ministry.
Yeah. It's there on, what's this page's name?
But that's a domestic, aka Namibian definition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you actually are right. They they're not contradict, but they give two descriptions here.
Uh-huh.
So the descriptions here, Hamid, is marginalization as context is understood as an ethnic group based condition rather than an individual characteristic.
Yeah.
Just elevating that slightly more when
it's an ethnic based condition.
Yeah. But then they also describe, where's that specific description? But it's a description that also cites the deprivation that you and I have been citing.
Yeah.
Then they bounced downwards to say marginalization in this context is understood as an
I think what you're looking for might be about 4 or 5 lines above that statement.
There was one where they technically set a parameter, and then when you cascade downwards specifically, and in that chapter one of the introduction,
mm-hmm.
you get to that point 1.2 overview of a marginalized group. And then you get to the identification of these marginalized communities is based on self-reported ethnic affiliation mm-hmm. as recorded in the 2023 population and housing census. The classification follows ethnic census, official census ethnic categories and is consistent with national definition of marginalized communities as per the Ministry of Gender Equality and Social Welfare. But slightly in that first chapter, mm-hmm. there was a definition they gave in terms of marginalization itself, which fits into the global particular parameter, which, you know, sorry for stopping your train of thought there, Hamoud, mm-hmm. but it was interesting that they actually sort of like these two particular perspectives, you can see that they align, but they are parallel. They don't contradict. Okay, they slightly contradict each other, but It is based on a notion that we already identified when we started off, a deprivation that takes place.
Yeah.
But here, Ministry of Gender and Welfare's explanation or identification is based upon the size of these communities. But there's an interesting thing of one of those communities, Helmut. And we will get into that discussion because there's literally like, they say, not on an individual level, meaning you and I, but if you have a community the size of 20 people, which could be a cluster family with extended family members,
yeah,
is that not individual? Would that not classify as an individual setting?
Constitute that.
Yeah, because it technically speaks to one family group. It probably shows how at risk a specific language could be. Because I'm feeding this into the discussion I attended last year on a what was that? It was 10 December, Human Rights Day, when the Legal Assistance Center was hosting sort of like a paralegal workshop for SUN paralegal representatives from the communities, meaning how to communicate legal principles, who to talk to about, you know, if there are complaints in a community, or if they are like conflict scenarios, for example, a larger community obviously infringing on the rights of one of these marginalized communities. And one of the interesting things that I learned from that particular workshop, okay, it wasn't a workshop for me. I was media. I was invited as the media to come and, you know, take photos, record, sit there, and I was just, you know, drinking up the coffee and the tea, yeah, you know, and the cookie and eating the cookies. And from that dimension, you could see how important it was, Helmut, that everybody understands the constitution, the laws of this country, which is a very good thing, primarily because marginalization efforts usually also try to empower instead of just throwing assistance the whole time, you know, at a community that is under threat. But, you know, you were still on a train of thought. Sorry, Hamoud. So I just wanted to factor that in there as a partial description for you.
Yeah, I have two things that I want to, you know, two things that I want to point out.
Yeah.
The point that you read.
Please, Hamoud.
Now, that is exactly why my phone is perpetually on silence.
Yes, Hamoud.
And I keep missing your calls in the morning.
You know, it's just a little bit of what do I call that thing? You know, internal administration. Don't worry, guys.
Yeah. It's internal admin. Anyway, the point that you read earlier. That's was that page four? No, page 3 point, and that's point number 1.2.
Yeah.
Now that says the overview of the. Now this is from the NSA population statistics. Marginalized Communities Profile 2023 Census. So So 1.3, yeah, no, 1.2, that's page 3, overview of the marginalized community.
Yeah.
In this profile, marginalized communities are defined with reference to specific ethnic groups, namely the San, Over Tuwe, / Over Tawa, and Over Shimba. Now, the point goes on to say that this group have historically experienced social, economic and spatial exclusion relative to the broader population, largely because of long-standing structural, historical, and geographical factors.
Yeah.
But there are two points that I want to focus on from that definition, which is why I kept referencing it. Now, the first point is the part that says these groups, plural, have historically experienced social, economic, and spatial exclusion relative to the broader population. So now that feeds into my colonial reference.
Yeah.
Because if you just take for example the second. The second half of that, of that sentence.
The parallel parallel.
Yeah, you are doing a comparison here.
Yeah, that, of these two definitions.
Overall.
Yeah.
The entire, not just Namibia, the entire Africa has faced a lot of, deprivations. All throughout the colonial period.
Mm.
So if you are just going to define it using deprivation of a specific group to certain economic activities or just the national activities in general, it's going to bring up a discussion that will take you back to colonial times. In my point of view, where you'll have to explain. And someone can genuinely ask, what do you mean deprived? Because we're all colonized.
Mm.
I was deprived of, my grandparents were deprived of a certain education system, for example,
mm.
or a certain, economic activities in the country they would have participated in. They had the ability to participate, but they were not allowed to. By the government at the time.
Yeah.
So that falls into the category of, being deprived into participating into a certain activities in the country. So, that's why this definition for me, provides some kind of clarity as to what the NSA or or Namibia means, for example, when they say, okay, speaking from a colonial standpoint, we're all deprived of certain activities that we wish to participate in.
Mm.
But when we talk about marginalized, we're talking about certain groups that were deprived more in comparison to the rest of the population. At least that's the understanding I'm getting here. And I'm gonna read that again. So it points out that these groups. And the groups are the Sen, the Sen group, Over Tuwe, Over Tawa, and Over Shimba. These groups have historically experienced social, economic, and spatial exclusion relative to, that's the key word for me, relative to the broader population, largely because of long-standing structural, historical, and geographical factors, because the, geography also now comes into play. And the geography aspect or the geography reference becomes very important for me because for a lot of reason, one, chief among being that we are very centralized. That also feeds into that. And marginalization in this context, that's when they come to the point that you referenced earlier now. Marginalization in this context is understood as an ethnic group-based condition rather than an individual characteristic. Now, so marginalization here is bringing up the deprivation discussion, and that deprivation is being looked at from my understanding, as this is deprivation that goes beyond the deprivation that everyone was subjected to. It seems like there are certain groups that had it far worse in terms of extremity.
Mm.
And this is just, we're just looking at certain factors here, and these are factors of economic participation.
Yeah.
And we are now, you know, I'd say the interesting thing is we are having this conversation 30 years after independence, and aren't these the things that we should have sorted out first?
I don't think it's a conversation, Ahmed, that we're only having now.
Mm.
It's a conversation that has been basically, if I can call it, suppressed.
Oh.
Because if any of our listeners, just for the interest of sake, you know, if you guys do this small little exercise, look up the Ovashimba, mm-hmm. and you write it TJ, not SH. The Ovashimba, you will get Himba references specifically on the internet.
Yeah.
And then there is the, and I specifically wrote it Ovashimba. And then you've got the other group that is mentioned, the Ovatwe. The Ovatwe, yeah, so the Ovahimba separate from the Ovashimba, and then you've got the Ovatwe. Now, when you look at, now there's this lovely little resource known as the Indigenous Navigator. I don't know if this is a Namibian. No, it's not a Namibian website. So, all three, there's a similar strand or denominating characteristic between all the groups, Helmut.
Yeah.
Is that they all are nomadic. Except for the San, because the San are not agricultural. They're not livestock herders. So, they're not pastoralists.
Yeah, no, they're not.
They're not nomadic crop cultivators. So, you know, they don't grow anything.
Mm.
Yet they are hunter-gatherer, part of their fiber, their social fiber and their existence is about a kind of a hunter-gathering, not scavenging, but it might look like a scavenging. But you've technically also seen when you were based in, you know, as a bush teacher, sorry for bringing up that name again, but you could even see, for example, what the kind of lifestyle and the kind of nutrition they accessed as a nomadic group, the Nsumkwe, you immediately looked at build, height, body mass,
mm-hmm.
and bone density and structure, because nutrition is a critical thing, specifically in terms of how people grow. I mean, the reasons that you and I obviously look the way we look, we sound the way we sound, you know, developed voices and all that.
And you have you had no idea I could fit in perfectly.
What?
Into what? In Nsumkwe. Yeah.
Okay.
Both vertical and horizontal wise.
Okay. I see now this week's celebrations is not ending, I am.
No, it's not.
So, when you look at that dimension,
specifically
from a nutrition, and from activities and characteristics,
we
get to understand specifically why, in a Namibian context, they are cited as marginalized groups. This then gets tricky specifically because we're obviously talking about cultural heritage, and this is where dimensions of, like, for example, the mandate that the National Heritage Council has, that directorate under which the council exists, there's a directorate of culture in that super ministry of MESAC.
Mm-hmm.
I see that you've got that thing open, that specific document. Helmut, what's that document's name? One from is it UNICEF?
UNDP.
Is it UNDP?
Yeah.
But UNICEF has a similar one. Because here's the funny thing about UNDP and UNICEF's particular mandate when it comes to like demographics of a country.
Mm-hmm.
UNICEF has an educational perspective,
with
a scientific perspective, but then UNDP deviates in terms of trying to help develop what UNICEF technically assists you in. So they have this cross-cutting or sometimes this clashing.
Like overlapping.
Overlapping role. They don't, okay, incorrect phrase that I also used, clashing. But in many scenarios, you can see that there's an overlapping or duplication of their roles.
Mm-hmm.
Reason being, MESAC is sort of like a lead ministry or a ministry designate for both of those two particular agencies, UN agencies. So when MESAC has a feeding program for schools, which you also saw, which is part of their tendering process, which forms part of a specific program known as that school feeding program that they've got. I don't know its specific name, but it's a school feeding program too, which is subsidized by the state, which is a dimension specifically that also falls within the Ministry of Gender Equality and Child Welfare, because it's a child.
Yeah.
And now you see two ministries basically also overlapping on the same particular thing. But we also know that MASAC's ultimate basic mandate is education.
Mm-hmm.
It sticks to that education role. It basically tries to just, empower the education scenario, which is a little bit tricky because if you have multiple directors like that super name indicates, basically, there will be opportunity cost. Meaning, if you wish to produce Namibia's first, son or Himba or Ovashimba or Vatwe footballer, from a school project where, or school that is where, what is that joke that David likes making, combined school or project school? Let's use that kind of a school. It's David's jokes. I have to attribute who uses these words so that our listeners don't show up and beat Dwight up there at the gate as I'm,
at least they know they'll be waiting for David.
Yeah.
Just see someone punching him in the face. What do I do?
No, David is honest. He says it's project school, that particular classifications. So let's say if Namibia has a goal to produce a world-class athlete from one of these marginalized groups.
Yeah.
MASAC then has to now try and pitch resources at that specific where that school or where that particular kind of a community lives, where potentially these athletes might come from. But it gets difficult, Helmut, because it clashes directly with the norms, the customs, the traditions that many of these groups basically have. So what are these norms,
exactly,
customs, and cultures? What's the first thing, Helmut, that you would identify? What's the first thing about installing a fixed infrastructure like a school,
mm-hmm,
and a clinic? What's the first thing that goes against these people?
When someone is nomadic, for example, hunter-gatherers, for example, you have to understand, for you to talk about inclusive development in the Western context of the word development, you are talking about, and you are talking about building physical infrastructure. You are talking about overhauling the whole culture.
Modernizing them.
Yeah.
Which basically puts you as the government of Namibia in direct conflict with the UN because it's a human rights discussion.
Now I understand. Thank you for bringing that up, because it fits into the confusion that I just picked from the UNDP here, which did they go? Yeah, because.
What confusion did they speak? Our document?
This is theirs.
Oh.
From.
Didn't we write it?
Now, from 2010, this is a global one.
No, Helmut, it would say somewhere there, in terms of the forward, they would usually thank agencies that participated. And in many cases, I know Namibia goes and gives its own data, and you sit there going like, how do you guys still acknowledge?
So we're just handing it over. No.
That's why people love the planning and the documentation that we do.
Yeah.
Just for us to, just for them to say, yeah, thank you, compliance and writing the document.
Yeah, well, thank
you. But did you implement?
Thank you for providing all this information.
Yeah.
I wish you could do the same with the open contracting, yeah.
Yeah.
So, here's the thing.
And, procurement tracking.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Procurement tracking. So now, the next passage is from marginalized minorities in development programming. That is from the UNDP. Now, this is from 2010, if I'm reading this correctly. Yeah. From May of 2010. So I'm not I'm more interested in the, how they were trying to sort of explain, words like minorities and not just the marginalization, because more often, one thing that's seen is that more often when the word marginalization is used to describe a group of people, that group is more often the minority.
Mm.
Yeah. So on the seventh page, it says it asks the question, sort of before getting into the whole context, which I think is a good thing. Who are the minorities? No legal definition of the terms of the term minority has been agreed in international law. Individual states recognize a wide range of groups domestically as minorities based on shared ethnic, cultural, religious, or linguistic characteristics.
Yeah.
Now, that whole unique definition that's unique to a specific country with regards to what constitutes minority or what constitutes marginalized community in their country. So it's not a one-size-fits-all in terms of definition and description. Every country, this is one thing I like about the UN. They just give you a template and they tell you, just modify it to your environment.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it goes on to say that, such groups are typically non-dominant, aka they are not the majorities in spheres of economic, political, and cultural life. Now, in the absence of formal definition, the existence of a minority group can be assessed using objective and subjective criteria. This criteria has been elaborated by various UN independent experts drawing from international standards. Then they now dive into the two definitions, the subjective and objective description of minority. Objective criteria focus on the shared characteristics of a group such as ethnicity, national origin, cultural language, or religion. Culture, language, or religion. These categories derive from the only global standard on minorities. The UN Declaration on the Rights of Persons Belonging to National or Ethnic Religion and Linguistic Minority, UNDM. This afternoon was my first time to hear about that organization.
I would have thought it would have been part of UNDRIP, the other one, the other indigenous convention thing of the UN.
They have a ton of them.
I know.
Yeah.
I realize. It's like we stumbled. It's also like I stumbled between the two atomic treaties.
Yeah.
IAEA is UN Security Council. The nuclear treaty one that Namibia has to ascend to, the one that we have to comply with the exercise at the end of the year.
The whole exercise that's going to be done here for is it the testing of some kind of trial run or in terms of any type of nuclear fallout? Yeah.
Yeah, that exercise in October, November. That's a completely different treaty. That treaty is older than the IAEA. That treaty was established specifically even before the UN was established.
I thought we didn't start, toasting nukes until the 1940s.
Well, 1945, obviously, Hiroshima and Nagasaki happened, right?
There were a bunch of tests before that. That's what renders the beginning at all uninhabitable.
Yeah. And just after that, obviously, when Stalin realized that the Americans sat with us tech, then this treaty was to say, horse, you will not throw those flammable stones at me.
Yeah.
Just telling you. So, yeah. Now, that's the reason why I said that treaty is older than the IAEA, because the IAEA is an organ of the Security Council. But it is more functionary than this treaty, because I heard this treaty for the first time last year when that notice by the government came out that Namibia will now host this exercise. And I was like, what is this treaty? But yeah, so they've got a ton of them. Yeah.
Okay. The question you asked earlier that when you talk about, if we're going to talk about inclusive development and including the minority or marginalized groups into the inclusive development, we first have to define development on a local level, not on a UN or or Chinese, Russian, or American model, or the European, because that's where the that's where the subjective criteria now comes into the question you asked earlier. That when you think about building a fixed physical infrastructure for a group that is whose you know, like a cultural identity in terms of their society is nomadic and hunting and gathering. Hunting and gathering is not done on a fixed place, you know, at one place. You're going to have to move.
And pastoralism is based upon following pasture, rainfall, water resources for your livestock.
Now, that doesn't sound like it fits into our, like, world overall definition of development. Now, the reason why I'm saying that, the subjective criteria comes in and sort of like, pours fuel and the whole fire. Mm. Now, the subjective criteria focuses on two key points: the principle of self-identification and the desire to preserve the group's identity.
So technically, Namibia is adhering to a UN convention.
So adhering to the group's identity means just doing, I believe, what the Indian government does with regards to the Sentinelese in the Sentinelese in the Sentinel Island.
The prehistoric peoples.
Because a lot of people, especially the British, kept going to that island. A bunch of them,
they tried to colonize. They tried to modernize those people. The Brits, there's
they even kidnapped a few.
There's like abandoned structures there,
which is a very British thing.
But I've got to tell you a story about that island.
Yeah. So, right now, at least the last time I checked, the Indian government, the Indian Navy, guards that place. No one is allowed to get anywhere, I think, closer than.
Not even 5 kilometers.
Yeah, you're not allowed to get anywhere near 4 or 5 kilometers to the, you know, to that place. Line, yeah. So, in other words, while the British were trying to do what they do best in, to, you know, with regards to let's go and quote unquote colonize them, the Indian government was just like, okay, you know what? Have you just wondered, have you ever just stopped to think that maybe the reason why they want to stab you with their spears is because they don't want you there?
No.
Well, just leave them.
It's not just not the wanting, Helmut. The reason why specifically the Indian government maintains full isolation of that island and the people on that island.
Yeah.
Is specifically, firstly, it starts from
diseases.
The disease discussion, exposure of modern diseases to that group. Secondly, is because literally their DNA is so old, Helmut. The Indian government just decided, you know what, let's not even mess about. And specifically, if you go look up this island, dear listeners, and you have an idea of what the citizens of India look like, even of Sri Lanka, and when you look up this island, you will realize, okay, so this is actually an African prehistoric civilization. And that's the reason why the Indian government technically preserves full isolation of this particular place. But story time, Helmut. So recently, a guy was arrested, an American or Canadian. Is he American? But anyway, so there's this new phenomena happening. Known as in real life streamers, IRL, if you guys don't know. These guys that walk around with their phones, you know, in tourist destinations, and then they look there having just conversations and interactions every day. Yes, I'm showing you guys there on the live stream. They literally walk like this the whole time. Yeah. And this guy went to India. Now, if you know what an IRL streamer does, in order for, because they make money.
Yeah.
For this IRL streamer, he wanted to sort of like, push the ante, you know, push up the excitement level.
They always do that.
It's a Johnny Somali scenario.
Yeah.
Johnny Somali was purely the same. It's purely the same, but Johnny Somali is what they call, I discovered the term for the first day, time today, because this every morning I've got a, I get a daily update of, you know, of streamers being shown reality, you know, the impacts of their actions.
Yeah.
There's this lovely YouTube channel known as Atozi, and this guy just follows up all nasty streamers, the things they do, and the consequences that they meet. So, he explained in that one scenario, this streamer went to India, heard about this island, because this island is not far from a very popular holiday resort town or city of India.
Yeah.
And decided, you know, I'm going to have a humanitarian outreach endeavor. And he's going to go try and show this ancient civilization a can of Coke and of some of the modern foods that he bought there in that town on that on the Indian mainland.
Mm-hmm.
And then he even hires a boat. And the boat, the guy that hired him, the boat even said, I won't go with you because it's against the law to approach that island. The Indian is telling him this. The citizen is telling him, I won't go with you because it's against the law, even for us Indians,
yeah,
to approach this island. So our homeboy, and he, I think it's he's sort of like holiday friend or whatever. It was also another American. Unfortunately, these guys were Caucasian. Let me use the political name there. Because, you know, it's only, you know, people who believe that they're Indiana Jones scenarios. Trying to Indiana Jones in 2026.
Look, that's
trying to discover a new civilization, but we all know about it, even here in Namibia.
Look, that's one of those things I call white people thing.
I don't know, but that's why. but this was not an American perspective, obviously. So he goes, he and his buddy go there on this boat that they rented, that they hired. And they got within like 100 meters.
Yeah.
But then one of them got injured or close to being injured because there was a welcoming party by this ancient civilization on the beach.
That doesn't sound like.
And this welcoming party always has bows and spears. Bows and arrows and spears. And so.
That's a defensive position.
And these guys were busy, you know, shooting arrows at this boat. And I think one of them actually got injured, but they had to turn around. Luckily, they did not land. They even threw the sort of like new civilization, you know, gift back of a can of Coke and other goodies. And it washed on shore. And then the Indian Coast Guard went to retrieve it because the people didn't touch it.
Yeah.
They didn't even recover it. But it was still arrested. Because everybody in India knows, don't approach this island. And this island is also one of the World Heritage Sites, I think, that the Indian government manages. And for some reason, obviously, you know, you always get these people who, what's that favorite phrase that was drilled into my head? The path to hell is
paved with good intentions.
Paved with good intentions. Remember this, the path to hell is paved with good intentions. So the downside was this guy tried to do supposedly a noble thing, but you and I know about Terra Nullius and its particular impacts, and it just looked weird, because if a government official tells you, do not approach, do not do this, you just have to comply.
It's not rocket science.
It's not rocket science. Just comply. So, yeah, that was sort of like one of the case studies that popped up.
Okay, that's like the best case scenario, because there are a lot of people that found, you know, that went to that island and never came back. And that's not because the island is, you know, has some kind of magic power.
Yeah,
it's just
haunted
or something, or anything like that. No, it's just that the people on that island, just like any type of group of people that have lived in the you can only imagine how much isolation they, you know, they have faced several threats, and which brings up the defensive, you know, the defensive individual in the defensive human in an individual or in a group.
Yeah.
Take for example, you know, that can happen to, you know, that can happen to any. Just take a person and deprive them, you know, or first of all, when they face certain dangers, because which is very, you know, wherever you find yourself on earth, you are bound to face certain dangerous situations.
Yeah.
So you learn how to defend yourself, and then from that time, it becomes you know, like your go-to move every time that you come across something that doesn't look familiar. So it's safer to assume that something or someone is dangerous, then finding out that it's not dangerous, than assuming that something is not dangerous, then finding out the other way around.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you look at it that way, it's easy to understand. Again, going back to the Indian government, which they just said, okay, we want to develop as a mainland India. We have a lot of, technological, economical, or industrial development plans that we'd like to make. Mm. They produce the largest number of tech CEOs on the planet. And, especially, those ones that are feeding the Western tech market. But they have never built a school or a university on that island. Now, if you ask me, that is the Indian government practicing the second, practicing the objective criteria of the, of the UN definition of minorities. Because, first of all, just preserve the group's identity.
Yeah.
Let them do what they do.
Yeah.
Now, that example becomes very easy for the Indian government because the Sentinelese Island is part of the Andaman Archipelago and it's cut out from all other islands.
Yeah.
It's isolated,
yeah.
So it's very easy to just let them wander wherever they wander to get whatever sustenances that they need to stay alive. But for countries, take for example Namibia, it becomes a little tricky now in the 21st century to allow people to go with a pastoral or nomadic lifestyle or hunter gathering lifestyle and also have talk about the environmental protection and then animal protection and yeah. Conservancies and all that. So these two are on a collision course. So Namibian, we want, now, if we are talking about, okay, preserving the identity of a certain ethnic group or certain ethnic groups, just let them live their, their lifestyle, which I think is a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
They didn't ask for anything that you are bringing to them. The Indian government, was that in 2015 or 2016? I'm not sure. Or 2013 there. There was a tsunami in that because it's tsunami prone area. So
I think it was on the site specifically of 2000. Where was, yeah, it was 2005 that year that that tsunami hit.
Yeah, must be.
Yeah. Because it was on that site because, the threat was perceived also on India, Sri Lanka, and Pakistan. So it would have been in that threat-prone area.
It actually must be that one. Because the thing is, what happened was the Indian government sent choppers to go and assess the area from the skies to see that everything is fine. Except, the Indian government send choppers to go and, look at the condition and see if there's any type of damage or if they needed any kind of help. I don't know what type of help they would have provided anyway. But, that chopper came back with arrows.
A clear sign that we don't need help.
You're not welcome.
No, it's a clear sign. We don't need help. It's not just about a welcoming party. It was more like, just stay away.
Yeah.
Just stay away. Don't worry. We're fine.
That chopper came back with arrows. That's how they know. Well,
hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm. Just give more eyes. Anyways, long story short. Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long. Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Okay, my turn.
Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying,
my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm.
Just give more eyes. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Welcome back.
Yeah.
Now, just let me just now finalize my point. According to the UNDP, Article 27 of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, concerning the rights of persons belonging to ethnic, religious, or linguistic minorities. Now, the term race is sometimes used alongside ethnicity in legislations on non-discrimination. This is this is not considered an endorsement of a nation's distinct race, but is a recognition that practices of racism and racial discrimination nevertheless persist and need to be combated. Unfortunately, human beings, we categorize ourselves in a lot of ways, be it skin color, tribal differences. And
a long time it was on religion.
Religion is the biggest and the oldest one. And this is true for, interesting enough, all religions.
Yep.
You have...
well, today it's manifesting in a very ugly thing. And coming back to India.
Yeah.
Look, I know politics can be a difficult thing to acknowledge as a problem child in the modern society that we look at.
Yeah.
But here's the bigger frustration, Helmut, of looking at a BRICS country or BRICS major member like India.
Mm.
And the unfortunate thing is that India's current ruling party is driving, unfortunately, we call it tribalism,
mm-hmm.
but you have to look this at on a level of the Austrian painters' particular policies.
The caste system?
No. The caste system is older.
Yeah.
The caste system is...
So this is something new.
Yeah. It's literally what the BJP is, the party's name of Narendra Modi. The BJP is being accused even by... you know, people within India of being purely racist, because laws have come out in 2024 and in 2025 about systematically driving out Muslim populations out of various communities across India, which has also led to this heightened aggressive stance between India and Pakistan, because Pakistan is majority Muslim. And when Pakistan was formed, mm-hmm. after the British, you know, pulled out of what was known as India, because that India when Britain was there,
yeah.
was Pakistan, India, and Bangladesh together.
Yeah.
So when the British pulled out, the British said, okay, you guys that are there in Pakistan, you can now be Pakistan with Bangladesh on the other side. So mm-hmm. if you saw that earlier map, Helmut, of Pakistan, there were two Pakistans.
Which you would include today's Bangladesh.
Yeah. And then that became also a full-on marginalization discussion, because the Pakistan then was being administered out of the current capital of Pakistan. Is it Islamabad or is it Lahore? One of the two. And how the first Pakistan-India war broke out is because the Pakistanis were being given by the Americans jets. And then they would fly over Indian airspace and go bomb the political antagonists in Bangladesh, because the people in Bangladesh are a completely different ethnicity with sub-ethnicities. When Pakistan was technically formed after the British moved out, all the Hindu the people with who have Hinduism as a religion
mm-hmm.
withdrew out of Pakistan and moved back into India. Obviously because of safety, you know, scenarios. And when it became, well, for in India's perspective, when you could see it became difficult for Pakistan basically to administer control, continuous peaceful control over the territory of what we now know as Bangladesh.
Mm-hmm.
It just became more violent and more violent and more violent, because in Bangladesh, a political movement was busy formulating. And then, you know, the people in Bangladesh were put their faith in a single political entity. And the political entity based in now Pakistan didn't want to recognize this entity in Bangladesh. They both have got Muslim roots, Mm-hmm. Because Bangladesh also has a Muslim, is also majority Muslim, but is also Christian and Hindu and Buddhist, demographics within Bangladesh. Because Bangladesh must borders onto Myanmar on the other side. And the dimensions of this was technically what brought India and Pakistan to the first India-Pakistan war. Where Pakistan, where technically India developed the great mistrust for Britain, for England, or for the UK and for the United States, because the US gave Pakistan its first nuclear warheads. And then India went like, my brah, what are you doing? Why are you giving Pakistan warheads? And then what did India do? India went and procured much of its military hardware from the Soviet Union, which the British were like, it's what are you guys doing? And up and until, I think, the 70s, the Indians were procuring everything from the Soviet Union, except firearms. And then they started reverse engineering a lot of the Soviet technology, like the tanks.
Yeah.
And they started. India now has its own tanks that it makes. India now has its own rifles and firearms. India now has its own car companies, technically, which supply procurement contracts to the Indian Army, Navy, and Air Force.
Yeah.
So you could completely see that thing that I've also been preaching. If Namibia really wants to become industrial, break a few UN laws, guys. There's nothing wrong. You can always please explain later on. Break a few laws. I'm jumping the gun. So,
you know,
just break a few laws. You're a country. You're a sovereign nation. What's wrong? What could go wrong? Oh, yeah, they might send the WTO after you, you know, to say, hey. We will bring you before this dispute panel. But there's nothing wrong by sending a few mechanical engineers and tell them, reverse engineer that Audi engine or reverse engineer that Toyota engine. See if you can't make a Namibian car.
You know what? I want to go against you, but I've read a lot of Soviet and American history, and that's what they do.
Do you know what the Chinese did to the Soviets? Do you know what the Chinese did to the Soviets, Hamid? To give you a good example. I told you the story beforehand.
Soviets?
They had a border war about Mongolia.
Yeah.
The Soviets and the Chinese.
Yeah.
And this was the low point between Soviet-Sino international relations, because it was what the Americans wanted. They wanted the two poles of the two particular pillars of modern day, or let me rather say it back then, Cold War communism to basically destroy each other. And this led to this dispute over Mongolia. Because Mongolia in one stage was in the Soviet Union, and Mongolia in another stage was in China. So if you ask yourself specifically about Mongolia's particular modern history after 1900, it is sensitive, because they were colonized by both neighbors directly. So then they had that major conflict, the Soviet Union and China. And there was a new tank that the Soviets brought out. Yeah. It was, I don't know if it was the T-57 or it was the new range of the T-series tanks. The tanks that you see today that the Russians have.
Mm-hmm.
So this tank shows up. Now, back then, the Chinese only had reverse engineered World War II, or just immediately after World War II, Soviet tanks. Now, this was problematic, Helmut, because the technology was outdated, firstly. They couldn't really approach, and this was a fight about an island in Mongolia. This is a fight about an island in Mongolia. And I remember this documentary, they even interviewed one of the surviving sort of like soldiers from this unit who were tasked when this new tank was crippled on the battlefield. It was crippled, and then the tank crew abandoned the tank.
That's a lot of technology that's just out there.
It wasn't even a prototype, but it was like one of the first of the assembly line of this tank.
Mm-hmm.
This one Chinese unit, this one, it was a platoon basically of PLA soldiers.
Yeah.
These guys were tasked with literally defending this asset. You know, if you want
defending the technology,
if you want a dumb job, but a job that could cost your life, because this is what the Russians then, this is what the Soviets, not the Russians, this is what the Soviets then decided to do, Helmut. They went scorched earth. Destroy it. Don't let it fall into Chinese hands.
Yeah.
Destroy this tank. They were so lucky, Helmut, that the whole unit survived because of inaccurate bombardment. I don't know. Well, you know what? Satellites didn't, weren't the thing yet. So prominent back then. GPS system.
So they bombed the wrong area.
No, they bombed literally, and I don't know how lucky these guys were, but literally they bombed all around.
Except where they're supposed to bomb.
Yeah. And I'm not talking about like plane bombing, mm-hmm. Air Force bombing. Yeah. I'm talking about heavy artillery, offside grid bombing. And that is massive ordnance that they deliver. Those howitzer.
Yeah.
So that particular dimension specifically led obviously to that unique story being told. But then it flows into a dimension of where I left off specifically about India. So today, the politics is weird, specifically coming if we have to look at marginalization and protected groups within, a national context. The reason why I bring up India in this discussion is because, yes, Islam is one of the large religions across the world. Hindu is also one of the large religions across the world.
Yeah.
The discussion taking place primarily in that India-Pakistan, because that's technically India-Pakistan relations, is primarily the evidence shows that both scenarios are not really welcoming for people from other religions being present in their communities. A case in point that I'd like to show, for example, the things that Islamic State did when they formed, from Western Iraq into Syria.
Mm-hmm.
They went and damaged all of the World Heritage sites, historical installations. Now I'm somebody that loves history.
Yeah.
These guys had no, they didn't care, damage it or not. In the former Roman city of Palmyra, Palmyra is actually a Syrian city,
mm-hmm.
but just outside of Palmyra you have Roman ruins. These guys went and, do you know what these guys went and did? These IS guys, they became what's the thing that we Africans are accusing the Europeans of?
Colonialism?
Okay. The activity that led...
Actually, we are not accusing them. There's a lot of evidence
for that. We know. But it's this other thing that began in 2023. This activity of returning...
quote-unquote collected artifacts.
Yeah. Collected.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Quote-unquote.
Quotation
marks. Yeah. These IS guys started becoming artifact dealers and smugglers. Selling Roman artifacts. And guess to who? The same guys that are telling us Africans, no, but we are best equipped to look after it for you.
Of course.
The Europeans and the North Americans.
Of course it's going to be. I mean, a bunch of Belgian guys was that a year or two ago where, were arrested in Kenya for trying to smuggle, of all things, ants.
Why would they do this?
It makes for a lot of, the species of ant that they were arrested with has a lion associated, as part of its, species name.
Yeah.
And, it turns out it's on demand for billionaire pet type of collection in
and
Europe.
And that's how that python problem in Florida came about. Because of one
a bunch of rich guys just wanted
who had pythons. Who has a snake as a pet? First, please explain this to me. How do you have a snake as a pet?
Yeah, well, there are a lot of people that have that.
Who in Namibia? Who do you know, Helmut?
Not a lot of people in Namibia. I don't know any in Namibia, but there are a lot of. I think I can name three or four content creators that I've seen with a bunch of.
Don't have a cat or a dog. Close to that snake.
Yeah.
So, the downside, unfortunately, was that marginalization also comes or focuses in on cultural identity, freedom of expression.
Now, just reminding me of one scene in The Big Bang Theory where one lady visited a friend and found her with a pet pig. They were just talking about how she grew up, with a pet pig. And the friend was like, okay, wait, you had a pig for a pet? It's like, yeah, I really loved her. She was beautiful. It's like, and she was like, yeah, beautiful for breakfast. She was not happy.
Hamid, have you heard that people that make jokes about pets to the owner about the pet are some kind of a psychopath as well?
Really? You can't imagine it's a pet. I've been to KFC. After KFC, I'm never looking at a chicken as a pet again. Never. Not after Dunked Wings. That's not happening.
You know what's the funniest thing? On YouTube, there's this guy that has two bulls on his farm.
Mm-hmm.
Rufus and Redford. Redford, you can imagine, obviously, he's got like a brownish red pelt.
Yeah.
Rufus is, sort of like a... He's also, but he's got like white spots on him, Rufus. And then, you get hooked about Rufus and Redford's antics specifically on the farm. But then I go sort of think that to myself, I wonder what will happen to this poor farmer if he had to sell off one of these bulls to an abattoir.
I don't think he's
how
doing that.
How this guy will feel or how his wife and his daughter, because the daughter, she's like a young kid, just above toddler age. She's like 10 or 9. These two bulls actually like the guy's daughter and wife. When he shows up in this little golf cart thing that he uses on the farm.
Of course he has a golf cart.
The bulls decide to, they want to play with a golf cart.
But yeah. That's a rich people thing.
It's a farmer. The guy's a farmer. Is it West Virginia or in Virginia? One of those Virginia states they have the U.S. Or Kentucky, one of those states of the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Where you don't know actually the size of the farm could probably be someone's backyard here in Namibia, in Windhoek.
That's the size of the farm?
When they say farm in this country, imagine that you can literally see your neighbor.
Nice.
But yeah.
I mean, they have a continent for a country. I think they have a lot of...
Canada.
They have a lot of land, which is more often bought up by a bunch of billionaires.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, just from a description, coming back to the marginalization discussion, I like that, the NSA provides
Switch the camera to you, Helmut. You're making me famous.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, camera phobia.
People have to see who's been promoting,
Now, I like how they provide their own definition. And I'm pretty sure when the definition was being provided, they were like, all right, we have got to be specific here because we can't just say groups of people that have been deprived of certain economic activities in the country. Because, when you bring up the whole, brings up a counter argument that has colonialism to it, you will have to explain further by what you mean, groups of people that have been deprived of certain economic, economic activities in the country. So now they had to be more further specific that there is a lot of criteria that comes in, including geographic location. And this group have been deprived of certain activities.
Mm.
We've been deprived in comparison to everyone else.
Yeah.
And that's why I was like, actually, that's a good explainer. But two main things that is, it's kind of difficult to have Namibia's development or developmental plans without bringing up these two things. The first one being Namibia is a very centralized country economically and politically. The second one being the preservation of culture as part of, respecting, a certain group of people. And this is not just something that Namibia is doing. This is something that's being practiced the world over. And we just recently used, India is a good example.
Mm.
And that's in relation to the Sentinel Island. So So now, you know, you are basically playing, I don't want to say jump rope, but you are traversing between, you know, executing your developmental plans as a country and also respecting this, you know, this group's cultural identity. And we live in a country where I think the NSA and the Minister of Health, the NSA, they knew that. And they also understand that Namibia is a very, very, very unequal. So when you use the word deprived, you have got to explain further.
Well, I can describe a scenario in our case of deprivation.
Yeah.
The deprivation element is obviously, my goodness, now we have to throw in that ancestral land claims report.
Mm-hmm.
Where there also, once again, no borders existed discussion, which is a Pan-Africanist's wonderful story to also delve into.
Yeah.
I have to provide a disclaimer also for our listeners and viewers. Technically, I'm a Pan-Africanist with a limit. I like Namibia. I love Namibia, yeah, as Namibia is. I don't want to see other Africans specifically, you know, just show up and then not go home.
Okay. So you want them to visit, but you don't want them to move in.
Look, if you're Sadek, all good. If you're not Sadek, auf Wiedersehen. Chicken. Funny part. But anyway, so...
Okay, for me, yes, I think it's the same for me. If you are sad, actually, no. You know, I mean, when you come from Ghana, I'm most likely going to change my mind. And...
Why did you have to single out Ghana, Hamon, of all people? You know, they are wonderful people. I won't say beautiful. They are wonderful people across this continent.
Yeah,
You just have to go scratch a little bit, you know, to find them.
Scratch, huh?
Yeah. But Ghana is too obvious.
Yeah. There's just one meme that went viral early last year. Yeah, in Ghana.
Which was, what was the meme?
You don't ever die in Ghana.
Why?
If you have a headache and you leave that country, go back to your country. Because they have this burial ritual that went viral. I'm not sure if it's true or not, but you know, people just went bananas with it in terms of content creation.
Is it the pallbearers?
The guy's
carrying the
that one. There's a cultural practice, I believe, where you have people.
Mm.
Yeah, where you have people. that do practice a type of a ritual where they take.
How am I xenophobic?
I have no idea. Where they will take for example, you know, when someone passes away, they will, you know, as part of their burial ritual, they will put you in a position of, you know, of a profession you held. Let me just give an example here. Take for example, if Helmut was in Ghana, according to those memes, and he died, as part of his burial ritual, they will bring him in the studio and sit him in this chair. While he's dead. So.
What?
Yeah. So if you are a barber, they will just, you know, give you some, you know, one of those, machines and then, I don't know how they make them stand though. Now, and there was even one picture, there was even one video of one lady who was, I think she was doing, what's this, tailoring activities. So she had this tailoring machine in front of her and the people that were dancing around, it turns out, well, she was dead. It was part of her burial. Like, well.
So it's more like a celebration.
Yeah, I think it's part of their ritual. What I do not want to know is what happens.
It's a good thing you're calling it a ritual. Mm. Okay.
What I do not want to know is what happens.
It seems like...
What happens when the ladies of the night passes away?
Eish, Helmut.
So, people calling you xenophobic.
Well, yeah. So, just for our listeners to know. Technically, Namibia doesn't have a policy similar to what South Africa and Nigeria have, an open border policy to all Africans. Namibia is welcoming,
but
you get a visa. So you got to go home. And if you're not from SADC, I still stick by my words. But anyway, so if you're not from SADC, I can't help you. But yeah, when we look at that discussion that you just described now, Helmut, that also forms basically part of the cultural sort of like discussions. And we've got to look at a dimension primarily of how marginalization also plays into a broader concept. Because the economic dimension, which is something that anybody in Namibia can basically experience, economic deprivation.
Yeah, that's where it becomes a little, very nuanced discussion, the whole, marginalized and deprivation type of discussion.
Yeah. Dimensions also of that nuance comes through in the format of that there are similarities definitely between, for example, these main groups who basically say this is our way of life versus, let's for example, say Dwight.
Mm-hmm.
And Dwight has a different way of life, and Dwight's way of life technically is what NDP6 is trying to improve or enhance or mm-hmm. add more value to. And it would be slightly, I almost said criminal. It would be slightly off the path of the development trajectory to try and impose the same particular ambitions that Dwight wants to experience here with NDP6
mm-hmm.
onto these particular groups, these marginalized groups in Namibia.
Yeah.
But these marginalized groups, Hamid, are already boxed in. I'll put it like that.
Yeah, they are.
They are boxed in. Why are they boxed in? We have borders.
Yep. Regional and national.
Well, except for when I drove there along that border. What's that border there? That from Odivo to Oshikango, and then the tour guide last year showed us, oh, look at the wonderful gaping holes in the border fence. And I was like, wow, nobody's there patrolling it.
So awesome nomadic stuff. Type of lifestyle and the hunter-gathering type of lifestyle in the modern world becomes a little bit challenging for any government reserve. Unless you're talking about the unless you look at it from an angle of the Namibian government getting in an agreement with the South African and basically the entire African government coming together and realizing that, you know what, we each have different types of groups that we would like to preserve their lifestyle, which is nomadic and pastoral. If you just see them setting up their tents in your country, don't mind them.
That's just why I want, Helmut, that discussion that we looked at in 2024 of all protocol observed for 5 pages.
Uh-huh.
Nah. Which technically means nothing.
It doesn't mean anything.
With regards to the Orange River discussion, that's why I want the same particular allowance to be given specifically for Namibians who in the Hardap and Karas regions technically have family in the North Cape of South Africa or in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So that you don't need a passport. All I need to just show is just my ID or this document that says I'm going there to go visit whoever, wherever, in South Africa. Which is the same particular allowance that, sorry, Franz, so I'm going to mention, you and your peoples, you and Abigail's peoples, the guys that just e-way the whole day and show a letter to the border. Because I really couldn't understand, why are these guys being allowed to walk with a letter across the border? And Dwight here is having to show a full green passport to immigration officials on Namibia side. But anyway, that obviously also plays within the sort of like, how should I call it? Not to impede the movement of people or the free movement of people. But let's get into another dimension as well.
Now, on that whole movement of people that he just pointed out, also have to understand that there's one major issue here.
When it comes to managing your investments, should you rely on one expert or a team of specialists? With a multi-managed portfolio from Alex Forbes, your funds are guided by carefully selected investment experts working together to pursue more consistent outcomes. We pair the right managers behind the scenes so you don't have to manage multiple relationships. Strengthen your investment destination. Visit alexforbes.com today. Alex Forbes Namibia is registered and regulated by NAMFISA.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
Lipura nenge lo wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo toto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utite opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana unongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi tayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile ko berewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back from that extended break. We just had to, stretch a few legs and arms a little bit, growing a little. Age is kicking in. Now, where was I? Part of the biggest question is, if we are to go with the UNDP, or more like basically generally the UN definition of allowing certain communities in terms of development, because the main discussion here is, we're talking about, inclusive development. Brilliant idea. Now, there are two ways of looking at this. Are we looking at inclusive development as in including everyone in the Western definition of development in terms of build industries, have westernized everything from housing, hospitals, basically the entire lifestyle Western, which is what you find in most of the urban areas in Africa. Now, most, if not all urban areas, the more urbanized people become, the more westernized they become. And even more westernized than rural communities, which is not rocket science. It's pretty obvious. So when we say, inclusive development, we're talking about, uprooting people from their traditional lifestyle into how we would like to define industrialization as per the national development plans or SDGs, or do we allow certain groups to live by their traditional ways of life? And that's the objective and subjective approach to this coming out of UNDP, which I can't wait to see which one Namibia is going to adopt. But if you look at what, where we are going, I think we have adopted the subjective one and not the objective one. And because the one. Yeah, because the subjective criteria is the one that talks about, a principle of self-identification and the preservation of the group's identity. I don't think we are doing that.
No, we are.
Are we?
Yeah, we are.
Aren't we just westernizing everyone in the name of inclusive development?
Which is modernization.
Oh, boy.
And transformation and inclusivity.
We'll have to find a sweet spot here. Because, one thing, because of the borders, not just the national borders, but also regional borders, we are looking at, it's almost, if not borderline, impossible today to just allow people to go on a nomadic or a hunter-gathering lifestyle.
Mm.
And not just that it's illegal to cross the border into a different country, but it's also not safe. Because you'll be migrating all through across Botswana. You find yourself in Zambia, and the next thing you know, you have to deal with M23.
That's a very good point, Helmut. M23 can also be the pastoralists or these migrating populations, for example. Okay.
Yeah, but those are not.
Let's remove the M23 label.
Yeah.
It's just bad. It's a bad example.
Yeah.
It's your example. But in, when I used it, it sounded just even worse. let's use the Tuareg.
Yeah.
The Tuareg are the best example, similar to the Sun in terms of nomadic. But the Tuareg are pastoralists. The Tuareg have got money. And the Tuareg can buy AKs. And the Tuareg are currently a destabilizing force in Mali. And the Tuareg are technically, it's them and there's another group. They are technically Sahara Desert's, here, the Western Sahara Desert's main migratory or nomadic peoples. But the Tuareg are being boxed in by the Mali-Algeria border and by the Mali, is it Burkina Faso next to them? Or is it Niger?
You have Niger, Burkina Faso, that's it's in the same
Mali,
neighborhood.
Niger, Burkina Faso, ne?
Yeah.
They work like in a triangle, yeah. They're big, also being boxed in by the Niger border and they're being boxed in by the Burkina Faso border. The boxing in, Helmut, does not help nomadic or, yeah, specifically nomadic populations in the world.
Mm-hmm.
The Mongolians, which I mentioned earlier, are also a very good example of nomadic
pastoralists.
Yeah, pastoralists and nomadic peoples. But if you look at Mongolia, in essence, Mongolia is probably the world's largest communal land area. But
a very beautiful communal land area in summer.
There's one benefit in their scenario. They have homogeneity of a group. They are not like Namibia, where we've got multiple groups. Mm-hmm. So you can't just declare things like all land is everybody's and sagakhudarsa, because there is there's title deeds to land, which identifies private ownership and private land holding versus government. And these things make things tricky, specifically in using a template and using that example of like Mongolia with Africa, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you come in where I left off with the Tuareg discussion, the Tuareg, technically you could see their current actions, Hamoud, as one being a long list of not humiliations, but sort of like harassments that they've been experiencing since time immemorial, specifically. And when much of these West African countries got their independences with their borders set in, they also probably endured a lot more harassment under governments back then, because there were targeted programs to try and get the Tuareg to settle down, to convert their way of life, which is against the fundamentals of the UN.
Yeah.
To convert their way of life to be a more predictable way of life. Now, you and I know why a government would do that to such a group. A government would do that, not the Namibian government, a government would do that so as to avoid border conflicts.
That and for easy service provision, it's kind of difficult to provide the needed services.
If there's no one living in a town.
Yeah, if there's, because you need a specific location of where to find, how many people to find, to find there and what time of the year and all that.
Yeah. And you do know that the Europeans also have a nomadic peoples.
Yeah.
The Romanis. The Romanis.
They actually have several. They have this one I came across, one girl from Norway.
You met her? No, she's a Laplander.
Huh?
It's the Laplanders. The people that farm with reindeer.
Yeah.
Laplanders.
Those are like, I believe they have their own. That's when I learned that, it doesn't matter where you go, you'll find a certain, you'll find tension in relations to the natives, natives of a specific, indigenous groups with more often the establishment.
Yeah, because the reason why I use, even in a European context, indigenous groups, is because those people can show you a custom that has been there versus the broader, let me say, national identity is based off of a modern identity.
Yeah.
And you can see these things very clearly, Ahmed. For example, if I had to ask you, what comes to mind when you think of a Namibian identity? What's the Namibian identity? You wouldn't know.
No.
Because you know that there are multiple groups in Namibia. But if I asked you, what is an American identity? you would think it's immediately a Caucasian identity. You wouldn't even recognize that there's probably a 50-50 balance versus the Hispanic or Latin American speaking community in America. Mm-hmm. And then the Native American presence. Then the Black American presence. Because all of them need respect in terms of, okay, when you think of an identity in a U.S. context, mm-hmm. which identity is the dominant one that just pops up?
Yeah.
A European one can include even an African minority dimension. It's obviously when you come to the Asian countries where things get tricky. They become highly tricky because they are large populations.
Yep.
Unless you're Indonesia that has large ethnic groups or ethnicities with their own languages. But when you come to, I mean, okay, 300 million or is it 260 million Indonesians is a big population. 127 million Japanese is a big population. 1 billion Chinese citizens, it's a big population. But guess what? They're ethnicities. Even in Japan, they've got the people in, what's that island's name? Sapporo. The northern island of the northernmost island of Japan.
It's part of the Japanese archipelago.
Yeah, Sapporo. On that island, Hamut, up until the 1800s, people did not know whether or not the Ainu are also an indigenous group.
Yeah.
They didn't know if the Ainu are Japanese or not. But the Ainu have more roots to, not the Mongolians, but it's a combination of the Mongolians. If you look at genealogy,
yeah.
It's a combination of the Mongolians and the Chinese. But the Ainu have different facial features, their eyes are slightly bigger because they've got a more Eurasian look
mm-hmm.
Than they've got a predominantly Japanese Asian look. The Ainu, they're not as big or as tall, but they can grow a lot more beard than the average Japanese person.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously they've got a way of life that they're preserving. For example, also if you go to Taiwan, did you know that Taiwan also has indigenous groups? Taiwan does not exist purely out of Republican separatists that ran away from the civil war after they lost it against Mao and the communists.
Mm-hmm.
When those people ran to Taiwan, there was already like established, well, that was obviously after the Second World War. Yeah, after the Second World War. But there are indigenous groups who look like the Ainu. In Taiwan, who look like them. They wear different. They've got a different skin pigmentation than the average Taiwanese citizen. They have a different custom. They even speak their own mother tongues.
Yeah.
Instead of the overall national identity. It was only in Namibia. It's one of the things that's nice in Namibia, but it's technically also sort of like culturally destroying in Namibia. I know we went in a whole cultural identity discussion. Guys, I know. But we have to define some of these things because it helps to define the marginalized depiction that Namibia subscribes to.
The exit took off from where I'm trying to sort of like understand how we are going to balance the development discussion here. Because the goal of reaching out to marginalized communities, not just in Namibia, but this is a global, programs. The goal of reaching out to marginalized communities is to make sure that they are included in developmental plans.
Mm.
Now, not only have we not defined, at least not through international programs like you have the United Nations, which runs on international law. We have not defined, minorities or marginalization per se. Now, because of that, and then you have now a split of what can we do. Now, what do we mean by, or how do we practice inclusive development in relations to minorities or marginalized communities?
Yeah.
Are we going to include them in our mostly dominated Western type of development, or are we going to just provide the protection that the Indian government is providing to the Senegalese island so that they can live the lifestyle that the way that they see fit, which is a part of preserving their, you know, their ethnic identity? So I think that's where the balance is a little tricky, at least for me to wrap my mind around. Because if we have to now, if we have to go the Western definition, which is what you know, every urban area on the continent is basically telling you that that's the direction we're headed.
Yeah.
But if you are talking about you know, incorporating minority groups or minority ethnic groups or marginalized groups in the urbanized or Western definition of development, what does that mean about their ethnic identity?
Mm.
And I think this is where I think it's important to sit and have a conversation with, you know, with them with regards to what does the word development mean for you? Now, we know that if we have, it's either we go the Western way of the Western definition of inclusive development, or the Indian definition of inclusive development, where you're just saying, okay, you know what?
Or the Chinese one also.
Yeah. Now, here's the problem, though. Like I pointed it out earlier.
The Cuban one also.
It's very easy for the Indian government to practice what they, to do what they are doing with Senegalese Island. For one, it's an island. It's not part of mainland India. So those people can are free to move. They are not going to violate anyone's border on that island. But if we practiced that in Namibia, we'll have, we are bound to have to run into issues of few, considering the is it the Chindo brothers in the Zambezi region, like you know, a border crossing in any country, it's just a matter of time before you start, you know, having, you know, diplomatic incidences. So that means if we are to allow nomadic way of life or pastoral way of life or hunter-gathering way of life, again, it's just a matter of time before we start having diplomatic issues with our neighboring, with our neighbors, which South Africa, you know, you have Botswana, you have Zambia. So it's...
And Angola.
Hey, yeah, and Angola.
But we already had the issues in relation to any, all of them. We've already had those issues.
Yeah. We have one that we do not want to discuss with, you know, with South Africa.
No, we are. But the South Africans don't want to sort of like budge on it. No, it's known as a fact. Yeah. That's the reason why that all protocol observed of 2024
yeah.
was 5 pages of all protocol observed.
And nothing and then of you and I relevance. Have to
work from a paragraph this big for our listeners. 5 pages of all protocol observed. And one paragraph is all that Helmut and I had to work from.
And which was, you know what? We heard you guys have oil. Which are, we're here for the border, dude.
We're here because of a rubber.
Now, here's the thing. What I'm looking forward to here is how we're going to balance the whole development discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah. But now, just putting all that aside, let's go back to that definition because I believe it will take us into the NSA definition of marginalized, because from there it will take us into the sparsity part of the discussion in relations to why maybe it's a little challenging as to why, you know, one of the most challenging thing that will come in relations to service to providing service for you know, for certain groups, especially those ones that live in the far away areas, and yeah. We'll have a very large country by landmass, and we know how to live in our country, very far away from each other. That's before you even bring in the whole marginalized discussion. That comes to my head every time that I think about or look up, look at the map of Kunene region. My God, that region is huge. Now, your map starts on page, okay, let me just have that on page 3. Now, your map starts on page 6.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's when you start seeing like just how sparsely populated in terms of locations of different marginalized groups. Now, but just going back to, you know, starting from page three, these groups, and again, that's Ovatue, Ovatua.
Oh, the Ovatua, yes.
Yeah, the Ovatue slash Ovatua, that's on page three, and Ovashimba. These groups have historically experienced social, economic, and spatial exclusion relative to the broader population. That's a nice comparison slash clarification there. Largely because of long-standing structural, historical, and geographic factors. Now, before we come to that geographic factors, because I think that brings us into the MEPS discussion that is also, you know, just well illustrated by the NSA. What that brings up is, now I know why this is a very, you know, contentious discussion. In terms of, you know, just bring up that the marginalization discussion with your friends, and the first question that you are going to run in is, we're all marginalized. You're most likely going to run into someone that's going to say, okay, what do you mean marginalized? We all don't have jobs. Now you have to, you really have to pull your, you know, to pull your stats.
Your Oxford and NSA definition.
Yeah, stats.
And Ministry of Gender Equality and Child Welfare definition.
Yeah, you really have to do that. And I believe part of the reason behind that is because, one, we are a developing country. So, one, we are a developing country. The second one, well, we were colonized. Marginalization in terms of refusal to access to certain economic activities, there's a very thin line between marginalized and non-marginalized, and that thin line is where the point of relative to the broader population now comes in. But even then,
Helmut, relativity can't feature in this discussion.
Oh no, I'm saying relativity.
Oh, for the marginalized groups.
Yes.
Because it obviously is a comparison.
It has to be in comparison.
Yeah, to these groups, but it's even a scenario of the understanding of the word marginal. Look, I love it when people, you know, debate and have conversations about terminologies.
Yeah.
The applicability of a terminology, the eligibility of it.
Yeah, that's where it's going to get when you bring up this discussion. And I've done that, and we've gone through this even here on air.
Yeah.
Yeah, that discussion is quickly going to go into the direction of, well, what do you mean?
Marginalized.
Yeah.
But that's what I wanted to, that's why I wanted to highlight this, because yeah. Marginalization can feature in, for example, that conversation that I mentioned specifically of let's just say absent parents dimension. You know, that sociologists and social workers look at, you know, parents who are not there to raise their kids properly, to provide the necessary support, things like that.
That falls under marginalization or absent parents?
No, if you look at a template of what access to a resource looks like,
yeah,
and then you look at the opposite, then you can call it a marginalization of a sort. So this can come in the format of, you know,
In the general definition of the word.
Yeah, general definition. So it can't just be economic. It can also be, let's for example say you were marginalized because, let's say, you didn't have access to one family member or a relative, stuff like that. So marginalization basically means not having access to something. The broader description that also then gets applied is looking at a cultural identity, because you have to look from a cultural lens.
Yeah.
Why these four groups exist in this definition,
especially in these areas.
In these areas is because
the geographic locations.
It's firstly geographic.
Yeah.
Secondly, it's based upon their cultural identity, which you have mentioned, Helmut. Thirdly, it's based upon way of life, which factors into the cultural identity. It's not just about the language they speak, even though language is a culture. If you guys did not know that, language, what you speak, your mother tongue, is a cultural dimension. And Then comes all, and then you take the sort of like the whole assembly of all those parts together, and you have an identity of what you're looking at. But then Namibia goes and does the weird thing in 1990 by adopting English as a national communication medium.
Now, the question now that brings up, that comes up is, say we didn't adopt English as an official language, which one would be?
Who would accept whose mother tongue as an official medium?
Yeah.
Which would have raised conflict.
Yeah.
Which would have been a hop, skip, and a jump to a Rwanda situation.
Yeah.
Because that's what happened in Rwanda. Even though they had French as the national
community. Yeah, because those things, things like, take for example, 1994 Rwanda does not happen in a week. It takes decades of fermentation.
Up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it builds up.
It starts small, but it becomes dangerous with time.
It's years of resentments, of miscommunication, of misunderstandings, of misinformation. So it would have been problematic. So it was a clever move to adopt English.
Yeah.
Back then. Now, English is now busy wrecking the opposite of the planned modernization that even the founding president, when he and his cabinet brought in this directive back in 1990 with independence, wanted to see. Because English is doing that the opposite. It is literally stripping away these cultural identities of all these groups of Namibia. Because it's not the first time, and I know you have heard it as well, but it's people have complained even here in between our colleagues about the children coming from urban centers going back to the villages or to the farms, and the kids just speak English. The kids can understand the mother tongue. They know the mother tongue because the parents speak it at home.
Yeah.
But the parents are the ones encouraging the kids, don't speak the mother tongue, stick to English. There's nothing you can do if you're an outsider. It's that man and woman's kid. It's their right how they raise their kid.
Dude.
As long as it's legal.
I have a Zambezian friend.
Okay.
I speak her language better than her.
And you're not even Zambezian.
I'm not even Zambezian. That's because she spent much of her childhood in Windhoek.
Yeah.
I actually have a lot of non-Kavango friends. You know, I didn't actually appreciate going to school in my region and having my first language as my first language at school and then studying and learning it. Until I found myself here, then I realized that for a lot of people that went to school in urban areas, especially Windhoek, they didn't do their native language as their first language. And as a result, they are terrible at it.
Mm.
And which I think, there's a lot of irony embedded into you being terrible at your native language.
There is. And the irony is a reality, ne?
Yeah.
Because
it is a reality.
The irony reflects a reality taking place. I even just have to look at my brothers with their children. I sometimes get annoyed that I can speak, even though myself I'm not married and I don't have kids, and that is clearly by choice, don't worry guys. is that when you
thanks look, for the clarification, dude.
When you look at this dimension of how people raise their children today with this emphasis on English. Now, the funny thing is, the parents who are the native language speakers think it's a cute thing, and yes, they want to put the kid in a in one of Namibia's top schools in the country.
Yeah.
But the top schools obviously means what kind of opportunities you wish to achieve for your child. So the top schools, for example, would be mostly predominantly Windhoek-based, which would be mostly private school-based. Mm-hmm. And then when you look at the top-tier public schools of Namibia, well, Windhoek, it's basically the Windhoek ones. Once again, it's Windhoek High School. My alma mater is no longer there, St. Taurus High School. I'm really sorry, St. Taurus, but yeah.
No longer. So at some point they were...
Yeah, in the 80s. When I had conversations with my siblings, my three elder siblings, they told me that the reason St. Taurus came into being was because they took the English-speaking kids from Windhoek High and opened up an English-speaking public school in direct. It's sort of like a direct reaction because they wanted to maintain an Afrikaans identity for Windhoek High,
and then give an
English identity to the English-speaking
predominant English school.
Yeah, in that scenario. So Centaurus was created. And then, what was its name that back then? CDM created Concordia. Augustinium was created by the Catholic Church in Comestal. Jan Moore, Boys Pioneer School was the other government school. All those schools existed. But when you now have to look in 2026 at now the top tier government schools, everyone can just speak about Windhoek High. Academia, which, you know, was sort of like there in between, no longer, you know, up there. HTS, Higher Technical School, no longer up there because it was on the same level as Augustinium, providing the vocational training on a school level. Because then you would go from there into a VTC level. There was a school in Rehoboth. It still is there. MNK Gerze or MNK Gerze. Same thing. You would be learned technical and vocational skills already on school. Now we have moved completely to this theory-based system. Which is, remember the conversation I had with the tutor, Dr. Birkus. The conversation we looked at, the demystifying about the AS level. And she put it in such a very good scenario for us to understand. Now, you can basically see, okay, which is technically sort of like giving some, you know, brownie points to the apartheid education system, is that if you didn't have, if you knew that they were not theory inclined learners, you could cater for those learners that were practically inclined, that wanted to work with their hands, because that's the Finnish education
system. Yeah.
So, with what I'm now describing to you, Helmut, imagine imposing such a particular situation also on these marginalized groups, because the whole identity behind Namibia's idea of advancing forward is you need to modernize your population.
Yeah.
I found in the Sunday morning program that I did this past Sunday, I found a similar thing of, you can call it sort of like, not misinformation, but confusing signals happened in Italy. So after the reconstruction phase, after the Second World War. And Italy obviously became part of the Marshall Plan. There was this massive boom in industrial activity in Italy between the 50s to the 60s. But between 1969 and 1987, Italy experienced one of its negative and darkest chapters for about almost 20 years, known as the Years of Lead. The Years of Lead, basically resembling bullets, was primarily because, Helmut, you had all these political parties and political actors and political antagonizers, because they had like chaos groups and groups that didn't like anything government, anything constitution, anything democracy. And you had all of these actors, and they're all political actors.
Mm.
They're not economic actors. Some of them have economic benefactors or economic supporters, but many of them are political actors. All of these guys were wreaking havoc because they didn't like the idea of this modern Italy that's busy happening. And so the most tragic thing was this bombing that took place in the city of Bologna, where a timer bomb was placed close to a piece of infrastructure, like a support unit, a support pillar, close to the roof, that made the roof, when it exploded, the roof collapsed onto passengers that were waiting to catch trains during this month of August, because it happened on the 2nd of August, 1987. And it fell on people on the platform and on a very famous train that connected two particular cities. So, obviously, you can see the damage. But the discussion at the heart of what Italy experienced was this modernization trend, because Italy, after the reconstruction of from the Second World War, they had this modernization drive pushing, which saw massive rural to urban migration, which put stress on urban planning, because now they had to invest more in affordable housing, in mass housing projects. And where do some of these things sound similar? Ding, ding, ding.
Yep.
In Nambabwe.com.na. So when you look at these similarities that I just now explained to you, not the political chaos. We don't have political chaos, but you could see elements, some political parties and representatives you know, sort of like heaving up some of these political actors, because some of these people just have chaotic viewpoints. That's why I explained to you last year, Hamid, when you look at the extremes that you find in politics,
mm-hmm.
not everybody is like these people. The majority of people are not like some of the politicians that we know. For example, how many? Not everybody in the U.S. is like Donald Trump.
No. Look, one thing I've come to learn, especially about modern politics, is it's like, let me just say, it's like most politicians, especially the rich ones, it's like they're being paid to act like they're idiots. Now, for one, look, I don't...
Are we talking about Zuma?
Your word's not mine. Look, the thing is...
because Zuma is not dumb.
I know that part, which is what, look, I also don't believe that a fully grown man can be, Donald Trump type naive in terms of starting a war with Iran.
Mm.
No. And even if he was that naive, anyone in that position, and we see this even here at home, anyone in that position in the executive, take our own president here, for example.
Yeah.
She doesn't randomly make decisions. There are a chain of commands she has to run all these decisions through for advice and collaborations because she's running a country.
Yes.
Yeah. Now
she's got advisors.
She has advisors and all these things to help her with that. So, when you have a leadership structure like that, and a stupid decision comes out of it, it's not a one person to blame. It's the entire structure. Now, the question you just have to ask yourself is, it's either they are all idiots, which is absolutely not the case. It's not the case.
Yeah.
Or they have an end goal, which is more often the case.
Yes. And if you have not seen the end goal,
You will think everyone is naive and they're just, out of their mind. They have lost it and, I don't know what they're doing. Yes, you don't know what they're doing. They know what they're doing.
Yeah. Actually, we've got to bring in our Bible again, Helmut. That Bible has enlightened a lot of our discussions.
Oh, yeah.
Because really, it's at the bedrock of even like some of the NSA discussions that we've cited here, like the reports that the NSA has produced.
Yeah.
Because, for example, your lovely... example, the one of Epangelo Mining.
Oh, yeah. $1 million.
Starting a mining company with $1 million.
Yeah. Weed was still illegal at the time, right? Just checking.
And I have to throw your own words back at you, Helmut.
Yeah.
Please let us not consider that, the people that planned this idea were probably,
high on something?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or they were somewhere on doing a Snoop Dogg, imagining a situation. On some sort of hallucinogenic situation.
Yeah.
So that $1 million probably would have worked in, let's say, 1960. If you look at it, né?
Mm-hmm.
If Namibia was independent in 1960,
yeah,
that $1 million would have worked.
Because
mm-hmm. then $1 million in 1960 was a lot of money. Remember what I explained to you about that story that my uncle told us? About in the 80s, about his earnings potential on 300 rand at the time. And then I did some reverse calculations and realized, and if you take
it's a lot of money,
and if you take in consideration the inflation from then to now, it would have been 37,000 Namibian dollars that he would have earned. 37,000. Now imagine that salary in modern day Namibia. Let's say, potentially for the entry-level job that he had.
Yeah.
That's like a kingmaker's money. That's a kingmaker salary for many Namibians. Many Namibians probably have not even seen such a salary in their lifespans since independent Namibia. But you know what? That was a standard of living that was achieved back then. Namibia's biggest headache is trying to emulate that kind of living back then. But it's a whole bunch of things that you have to take into consideration.
Yeah.
Now, I love one particular point that in the presentation of this marginalization report, Helmut, that the statistician general, Shimofeni, Mr. Alex Shimofeni, highlighted in his presentation was they went and looked at essential services. But not essential services as what we would think about it in a media context, you know, like police. If you obviously start off with police. The essential services here would have been access to medical facilities and access to a post office. Could you believe it, guys? Wonderful thing.
The most basic.
But here's the thing. Have you ever... Okay, I know it's probably a dumb joke, but, you know, if you are a nomadic person, would you be using a post office?
You don't know the word. You don't know the word nomadic. If you think that,
it's a clear no, Helmut. Because
look, I don't
nomadic
think
is all about you are moving with. I'm your family not at one place. Loved ones.
Hey, you know, my favorite, Latin phrase that describes basically nomadic lifestyle is "omnia mea mecum porto," which translates to "I carry all my things with me."
Yeah,
that's nomadic lifestyle, and that's the exact same thing that you find with you find in Mongolia.
Yeah,
they know how to pitch their tent and have a whole family type of setup. And in a month or two, they're gone.
Yeah.
Like everything is tailored or made in a way that it's very, it's very mobile.
It's easy to pack up.
It's easy to pack up and take off.
And easy to erect.
Yeah. Now, you want to provide a service to people like that. It's not impossible. All I'm saying is, you're going to have to find different ways of providing that service, but not in a way that we think of it in terms of building a physical infrastructure. Take, for example, your brick type of hospital and having type of, extending the housing provision to them in terms of building houses for them. Okay, they'll be like, okay, we don't know what you're doing, but we are only here for 2 weeks.
Mm.
So now what are you going to do? Force them to be at one place for forever? Well, that will be you going against their ethnic identity.
Yeah. And that is a funny thing because, when you have to look at like national planning.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things when I always reference your hometown, Divundu.
Yeah.
When Divundu got converted, got its status as a town. You've started seeing first public service investments taking place. Police station was built. A clinic or public health facility was built. Then a shop shows up. A post office would have been built because that's the piece of infrastructure that, grants are now being distributed through. If you guys did not know this, now you do. Then suddenly you see that a telecommunications operator starts putting up a communication tower in the vicinity. You know, these are all the things that the local school kids go and sing and dance for. And then, have a little bit of a walk about in their school uniforms during normal school hours.
Yeah.
I'm saying that sarcastically because, many of us experienced that in Namibia.
Oh, that's my favorite.
Okay, Helmut was also a teacher, so he was definitely part of the... Part of the guilty squad who said yes to us kids having to go and sing and dance, but we much of us probably
the one that's gonna train you how to sing.
Now, that's what you basically see. It's a settlement being declared. What is a bit difficult because if you look up the Ovatwe and the Ovashimba.
Mm-hmm.
And the son. Okay, Helmut, let me tell you another great story. Another story time situation. One of my siblings at one stage worked with an NGO. And part of the NGO's outreach programs was trying to also, reach out to some of these marginalized groups. And one of them was a San group.
Yeah.
They're on the other side of Otjivarongo. So it's between Otjivarongo and on the way to Tsumeb and Grootfontein. Because
yeah.
Tsumkwezm was on the other side of Grootfontein.
Yeah.
But this is literally between Otjivarongo and those two towns in that vicinity there. And a sibling of mine organized through a local contact. But before we continue, we'll quickly take a short ad break, guys.
USAFE's customers love combos, right? Well, for just 589 Namibian dollars, you can get 10 kilogram Champion Super Maize Meal, 10 kilograms of Bokomo Fed Cooked Flour, 10 kilograms of Marathon of Brown or White Sugar, 5 kilos of Nice Rice, plus 1 kilo of Grande Pasta. That's just 589 Namibian dollars for 5 essential products. The ShopRite Group buys bulk, so you can save. Yes, we all save at USAID.
Welcome back and welcoming David. 15 minutes into the hour of six, you're listening to Home Run on Eagle FM. Dwight.
Yeah, so when you've got to look at these pieces of infrastructure being installed, that means people are going to grow up there, people are going to live there, things become predictable. This is what economic planning is about.
It's a predictability.
Yeah. But when you go just to a basic Google search of the Ovatwe, of the Ovashimba, and even the sun, the first thing that will be said is there will be a word, a catching phrase there. Nomadic is the first thing, which comes to the story that I just left off before the ad break. So this sibling of mine organized to do an interview with a community of sun ladies the community is not just women, but it was supposed to be there was at one stage
the engagement was supposed to be only for women or something.
Yeah, but okay. it was to interview for there was a specific like NGO that wrote a magazine on women's affairs. So that was supposed to be the meeting. Then before my sibling could actually depart and go and meet these people, because they had to organize a specific time and date, and then, you know, my sibling would drive from Windhoek all the way to there and meet these people, interview them, speak to them, you know, through a translator. So all these logistics were sorted out already. A day before departing, a phone call comes through. No, sorry, you can't come anymore because the community packed up in the middle of the night. They informed us last night that they have to go to a funeral, which is on the other side of, where did they walk to? On the other side of Omaruru or Otavi.
No.
On the other side. It's like a direct opposite. If you pull a line between
where they were supposed to meet.
Otjivarongo and Kitmansu. Otjivarongo and Grootfontein and Tumep.
Yeah.
And you pull a line directly, it would take you way past even Omaruru or Ochu.
Yeah, that's fine.
So it was like in a direct line like that. And these people just packed up in the middle of the night and just walked. Immediately. Just packed up and walked. Now, how are you going to bring services, Helmut, to people if you're a private farm owner who walks through your farm in the middle of the night? You know that they do this.
Yeah.
It's not criminal. It's technically criminal because you have private land. But technically you can't do anything to them because in the ancestral lands discussion of things, they are the sort of like basically, you know, first inhabitants of everything here. Now, how do we balance a discussion of saying, how do we balance a discussion of saying, listen, if you bring services to a marginalized group in Namibia, how do you manage bringing the services?
Mm.
How do you make things predictable for everybody's life to move forward? Because Namibia's whole thing, if you start from NDB6 or even from Vision 2030, Namibia's whole agenda is about modernizing and bringing improved service delivery to everybody so that all of us have better quality of lives. The dimension from this is literally one of looking at a discussion for the listener that told my supervisor that I sound xenophobic. The unfortunate thing is Namibia will defend that particular status. That's a legal basis for Namibia, because Namibia will look after everybody in this border, because we are technically a minority versus all other countries, meaning we don't have such large population groups. I'll give an example.
Yeah.
There's 3 million, there is about, let's say, 10 million coloreds in South Africa, just of South Africa's demographics.
Mm-hmm.
10 million people, coloreds. There's 10 million white people in South Africa, English and Afrikaans speaking.
Yeah.
Namibia's largest group is the Awambo groups.
Mm-hmm.
A million and a half, 1.5 million.
Mm.
That is a minority in terms of South Africa's statistics.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you factor that into Angola, there's a larger group in Angola, which technically would mean that even the Awambo would be a minority in Angola.
No, I hear you. You know,
we're welcoming David, guys. Yeah, we welcome David. Thank you. Yeah.
This is my show also. Yeah. They need to welcome me anymore.
Yeah, no, just, I mean, there are just 3 million of us on a large portion of land mass.
Yeah. No, but we are interconnected with all our neighbors.
But on the population thing, I would like to believe we are working on that.
But you know, Namibia is a very interesting case study, especially when you look at the land and also the numbers of people within Namibia. If you compare, I was shocked to realize that Namibia, in terms of geographical area, is almost the same as Nigeria. Then it's shocking.
By land mass.
Yeah, by land.
It's huge.
It's huge.
Yeah.
But when you're looking at that, it's let us ask a lot of questions, especially regarding the issue of being marginalized. You know, I made a joke to say, when you speak about where we are now, looking at our status of income inequality, I think 80% of us, are we not marginalized? Looking, it's just a joke to throw around.
Yeah. No, it's not a joke.
No, it's a genuine question. And you're not the first one to ask that question, actually.
And the other thing that we also need to look at is, do we have a long-term plan on how to deal with this issue of marginalized community? Do we have a long-term plan to say, by 2035, for example, we want to reach this level?
We have all achieved inclusivity.
Achieve this level. And one thing that we must always speak is that, yes, we understand that people did not get an opportunity. Some people were oppressed. Some people, or majority of them, they lost their land.
Yeah.
Some, they are in corridors of farms. But we have a long-term plan to say, apart from now healing the wounds of colonialism, are we coming to the point where we are saying this we want to reach it? It's the same thing with, you know, when you look at social grant, for example, the basic initiative of a social grant was not necessarily to keep on, you know, being there.
Yeah.
It is like subsidization to say you are in trouble, let us giving you this based on the economy where you are.
Yeah.
But you have a long-term plan on addressing the issue of marginalized community. And we look at all other policies also to say, now that it's incorporated in various government programs, where do we draw the line between somebody who is marginalized and responsible, and somebody who is marginalized and does not want to follow the laws? Because, you know, if you look at it very well, it starts being looking like a privilege, because...
Well, to be marginalized doesn't mean you don't want to follow the law.
No, there were case studies where people are saying certain people were given certain projects, certain people were given government jobs just through that process, but they end up really not...
The marginalization process.
They end up using that ticket to say, no, I can still come back and go to the government because I am special. But we also need to look at the aspect of competency. If we look at that, the impact, what we have done, it's the same thing that we need to ask about gender equality. Currently, as you are speaking, if you compare the issue of gender equality, let's take Namibian parliament. It's almost 50-50. Look at cabinet institutions of the state, everything. You look at corporate institution, but you also have to come to the question of to say, apart from incorporating these people, what is the contribution of those who are incorporated to the success of state institutions? Because just because you studied IT, and people should not get me wrong, just because you studied IT,
don't worry, okay,
no. I want to be I want to be understood very well.
Yeah.
Just because you studied IT. And you went to the interview of a highly technical position, and you are marginalized, then people take you because on that account.
Yeah.
But did you put more effort to contribute, or you are just there because of being marginalized? And these are the questions that we need to ask to say, if you have to be rational, impact matters.
Yeah.
To say, if you have a parliament which is almost 50-50 or 50-50,
in terms of gender,
what is the contribution of Zebra Style in the Namibia development?
Zebra Style.
And did we accommodate those who are competent, or somebody was just put there because a person is a woman? You know, our president made a very interesting statement to say, no, don't say because I'm a woman, I was elected because I'm competent. That's why we have to get into that. Say, yes, we understand that a lot of people did not get, we did not start at the same note, but they also need to put more effort.
Look, that's a very interesting concept, because if you look at it, especially from a political, you know, power structure that you just used as an example.
Yeah.
One thing that you see is that for a very long time, especially if you just use, you know, the current, you know, adopted idea of democracy as we practice it. But before this idea was adopted, we had, you know, monarchies. And in under monarchies, it was stupidly believed that if you are a man, just on account that you are a man, you will naturally make a good leader. Well, congratulations. We have one heck of a list of dictators.
Yeah.
And, well, clearly that whole, you know, point of view that was based on the fact that someone was wearing a trouser, not what was in their head. You know, they were giantly mistaken. So, I feel like, You know, the point you made in reference to, you know, to gender equality is that we don't want to, you know, to just make the same mistakes, under a different gender of assuming that, you know what, just because you're a woman, you must make an excellent leader. And again, one thing that you find interesting, especially in, you know, in the, you know, you can just go as far as the 1930s in place, like Western, you know, in the Western world.
Yeah.
There was a time, believe it or not, where they believed that if you're a woman, you can't be an engineer. And, well, then they just realized that you can be a guy and be a terrible at math. You are looking at one. But the thing is, if you, but the thing is, we are way past that whole idea of just, assuming that just because of someone is of a you know, of particular race or someone is of a particular gender that they are capable of doing specific things just on account of their race or their gender. Take apartheid South Africa, for example. Isn't that the reason why a lot of non-white were not afforded education higher than, you know, as high as their white counterparts? Because of the whole, you know, the whole dumb idea that if you are, you know, if you are a certain skin color, or if you have melanin, for example, you can't sit, you can't think certain, you know, past a certain threshold, which again was a dumb idea. So, that means when you are looking, so that means the main requirement when it comes to all these things, if you want to get things right, is, just think rationally. Which brings up now a whole interesting idea, which, I don't want to say it. I'll just pass the ball to Dwight. Now, Mr. Links, when it comes to the way things are done in terms of, well, affordability of opportunity, it turns out we're about to make a let them have cake type of leadership here. And the problem is, don't worry, that's not happening in Namibia. We are not inventing a guillotine. So the thing is, when it comes to preference.
I don't want to be anyone who is being guillotined. I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah. So when it comes to, you know, to preferences, and this is something that you have, you know, that you see, everywhere. And, you know, it's one of those things that we can all see, but I feel like we're not talking about it enough out of fear of political correctness. And that's because you have, you know, you stand a much, you know, we are looking at things like, you know, gender equality, disability, and, you know, especially for the most part, it's gender equality and disability. So now you, whether we like it or not, these two things are giving off, you know, to use the Gen Z language, they're giving a preference vibe. So if I went, for example, to a job interview with someone who was, take for example, a woman or was disabled, and then I ended up losing, you know, well, not getting the job, I most likely going to start saying things like, okay, you know what, I wasn't given that job because I'm a guy. And you know what?
And it is correct.
You remember that case that, you know, the Namra case that we went through?
Yes.
Yeah. What did that lady claim? She was not given the job because out of her, you know, because, and that's the beautiful part of being a Kavango. That because she claimed that she was, you know, one of the reasons why she was not given the job is because she's a Kavango.
Even though she was shortlisted and interviewed. And she had the impression, because she was interviewed,
she had the impression
that she might be successful, and that's the reason why that particular sort of like investigation by the ombudsman's report began.
Yeah.
But Helmut, you are right. Yeah. Specifically on the dimension, also looking at previously impacted groups specifically.
Yeah.
Namibia's current, and you see this currently in job adverts. If you guys have ever seen that line at the bottom of an ad.
Yeah.
Disabled people and women and people from previously disadvantaged groups are encouraged to apply. That means,
it's already giving preference vibes.
That means the HR practitioner will first look for those three categories in terms of looking through CVs for a job.
Yeah.
Now, on this list, if you even look at this list, and I'm going to be brutally honest. I'm sorry, David.
Yeah,
I'm
going
to be brutally honest.
Yeah.
No, you don't need to apologize to be honest.
because it also factors into many of the youth that try to understand how does the selection process also happen.
Yeah.
This is how it works. And since we are three men, it's a very easy example to make. But if there was a woman, she would have been before David. Then comes David, then comes Helmut, then comes Dwight.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yes. That would be the criteria. Helmut, it's a lovely thing. If you know someone who is an HR practitioner or who currently is, but no longer it's a lovely thing because that is Namibia's technically affirmative action position. How it would be assessed would be woman, black specifically, and you must come from certain particular groups in Namibia, and it cascades like that. Woman, black, then David.
Hmm.
Then would come a colored woman, a Nama woman between David and you. Then a Kavango woman. Then you. Then Dwight. Hmm. Then a white guy or a white woman after me.
I don't think there's a type of alcoholic beverage that will beat the confusion I have right now.
Like I said, it's a criteria.
No, it's correct.
We don't see.
Yeah.
That we don't see. Ne? You don't see it. You see it in a job ad.
Mm-hmm.
But unless you don't speak to someone that works in HR about how does affirmative action actually work, whether it be private sector or whether it be in the public service sector.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But a private sector person will tell you, but they will be shy to tell you. Mm. But it's like an unwritten contract law situation.
Yeah, no, it's there.
Yeah.
But one thing that you need to look at is that when you do not have enough opportunities, when you are bringing up that aspect of affirmative action, it's another way. It's a good policy on its from its initiation to make sure that you bring those who were not part of the system into the system. But when you are looking at it in a situation where we are now, just like what I indicated that now everybody is marginalized. You have, let me give you an example. Education students. They applied for three posts. Then 2,000 of them are shortlisted.
That was not a shortlist. What was that region? Oshana region.
Yeah, I think it's Oshana. Now.
How many positions?
2,200 showed up.
Yeah. But you know what is interesting?
2,200, sorry. 2,200 were invited to the interviews for three positions.
What is interesting is that for you to navigate through
three vacancies, Dwight. Three vacancies.
No, it's in some occasion, it's even one.
Go on.
Now the thing that you want to ask is that in a situation that we have already criteria of where within the unequal, you have the marginalized.
Yeah.
Then within the marginalized, they are also competing. Do you understand that if you are a woman and you are disabled, but you have a certain skills, then you are ahead than somebody who is marginalized and is a man.
Yeah.
Just to give you that. But within a broader context, you are in the context of an unequal society in an informal sector. That's how intensive the competition is. Now it's going to be very difficult to say, yes, having a policy is good, but do you have measures that making sure that the environment is opening up? Because it's going to be tough moving forward. It's almost the same example which I gave to say, let us not cry to say somebody is corrupt and is doing this and this and this. Just to give an example, to say when corruption reaches to the highest level, even the corrupt themselves, they are going to fight themselves. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
But just to give an example, to say in a society where we are one of the highest income unequal country in the world, the marginalized, we also have the marginalized within the marginalized community. And the other thing also, just to end into that, let's look at impact and competency. I have a friend of mine is somebody who is living with albinism. It's a very good friend of mine. We make jokes with him. But one thing that I always do, because he's my friend, eh? I say, when people come here and you are not behaving very well, they will think I'm mistreating you because of your condition. But sometimes you are just not growing.
Or
sometimes you are just incompetent. I look at the incompetence part. And he like it, because when you are in that environment.
Yeah.
How do you call a friend incompetent?
No, he's my friend. I go, so you maybe you're just incompetent at some level. But not because I'm discriminating you. It's what I said. But let us look at now at the impact, to say, apart from that, people should also be given an opportunity to say, no, we brought you into this ministry. You are women. You are previously disadvantaged, but work hard. This is not a ticket of freedom, because there are also others that you need to uplift from poverty. Because you find somebody, I've seen it, I have a lot of friends who are cops. I'm hoping they are not watching. But you know what is interesting? You find out that there are those really who are good at their work, but there are those who are just on the ticket. You can go to a ministry, then you find somebody to say, okay, this one was incorporated because of that. But the person is just not putting effort. And that is putting us down. To say, let us address the personality, not the background. Because if we don't go to that extent, then that policy will be failing.
Yeah, it will continue to fail.
Because if somebody is marginalized and given an opportunity and is not taking responsibility, or you are coming to work drunk, or you are disorganized in the street and all these things, just because you have that ticket, you are not really going to be touched. That is not going to take us anywhere. To say, first, you are a Namibian. Let's look at, yes, we incorporate you, but at least push.
David, you even go into everyday things, character. Let's look at on the local authorities. There's a serious threat of, and I'll call it what it is, theft.
Yeah.
In the local authorities.
Yeah.
That's happening in parliament.
No. Leave the parliament. Parliament is here in Windhoek. We all watch each other in Windhoek.
And Galvez.
But if you go to the local authorities outside of Windhoek, you speak to community members in those communities. You will hear how the great level of distrust they have for local council in their town. And sometimes you hear that it's basic things that in some cases it's not even like ACC would step in, and which is a highly publicized thing. It's scenarios like they get caught for stealing money from the cashier or from the financing, and the person has nothing to do with cash and money. For some reason. I'm bringing up this example because I lived in that town, Rehoboth, for 7 or 8 years. And we didn't know, in terms of like critical thinking, or I didn't know as a kid back then. If someone gives you a very dubious and fishy example, like, no, the system is off. Yeah, back in the 90s, you could say systems are off. Today, system integrity is the backbone for your organization to function.
Yeah.
So if someone, a cashier, tells you, I have to write out manual receipts for you, then technically you could think of, okay, it's maybe the IT department has to back up, or has to do some backup or maintenance issues.
More like, maintenance.
And you take it at face value. But when you get a receipt or an account from the local council saying you owe money for the previous month, but you got a receipt that you paid, then your distrust levels immediately jump up, because you'll accuse the cashier. Now, my sister who lives now in Rehoboth loves telling me all these lovely stories of Rehoboth.
Yeah.
How on the Facebook page of the town, the people out each other. Yeah, it's Helmut. I paid my water electricity with Helmut. It's Helmut's fault. And then Helmut comes in response, because he works for the town council, going like, is he Eki? It's not me. It's not true.
No, social media. Social media.
So you go in with like, you know, like everyday things that we would know, like, maybe someone has got problems and they are alcoholic, or, you know, they would probably have like an untidy, unhygienic facade. Those are things that you can immediately manage as a supervisor in a department. But things like theft, guys, there's a major thing like in African development, the African development framework, where we Africans don't address the discussion of our sticky fingers.
Okay.
And this is across the board. And it doesn't matter what skin color you are in the movie.
You remember the, you know, the dialogue expose that was done?
Which one?
The Peter Thiel and his secret cabal.
The thing that I still don't want to read. I'm so afraid of reading. This is, there's a guy that even did one of the economics YouTube channels that I follow.
Yeah.
Economics Explained is the guy. He's an Australian guy. He even did a video specifically on, which says, what does Peter Thiel want? Because you could even see that this cascaded through to him, and he was like, what do these guys want to do with the world?
No, that's a good question, because what does someone want? What they were going to discuss is is irrelevant. But the problem is, you have someone who is a founder and actually in charge of one of the biggest tech companies on the planet.
Yeah.
And now in the, you know, having some kind of a secret backroom type of bros discussion.
Secret society engagements.
With people that are supposed to be regulating his technology.
Yeah.
So now, that for me is the biggest fear in relations to technological adoption, because the person that's building the technology and the person that's supposed to be regulating the technology have a secret society, some kind of broad type of annual discussions, talking about just a bunch of random things like how to survive World War III and what is your sex life, which is weird for a bunch of dudes.
It's a weird conversation.
Very weird one.
It was even super weird as a high school teenager.
Then
you would even look at the guy like, what are you doing?
Yeah, and the person who is chairing the whole collabo runs one of the biggest Christian community, one of the biggest Christian community in the Western world.
Yeah.
So, you know, the guy that's telling others to wait until they get married is talking about how is your sex life.
Trying to counsel you on your pillow of faith. I mean,
that's really dumb. But addressing the elephant in the room. I don't think we are very good at that as a species. So I think, you know, we would rather beat around the bush than talk about what is at the table. Because now
I think it's us Africans, not humanity.
Humanity. The reason why I'm bringing up dialogue, it's because take for example, the Strait of Hormuz is an excellent example. We know what's the solution.
Just stop
shooting at each other.
Yeah.
Would they stop? No.
Would Donald Trump stop?
Donald Trump. What's my November main example? I have my hand so far up his. I'm moving his lips. Look, that's. The thing is, maybe I have read a lot of Yuval Noah Harari's books.
Yeah.
One of them being, one of them being Homo Deus, the Israeli historian.
Yeah.
When he's pointing out, now he's a historian and a philosopher. He's just looking at how power structures work.
Yeah.
The real power, and this is where, you know, the more you read into power, the more it sounds like you're a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah.
Now, this is a historian and a philosopher who is writing that, you know, the real, if you want to understand power, think beyond politics.
Power is not what you see.
Think beyond politics.
Yeah.
So, a large number of high class individuals that are so obsessed with power in its most, for the most part, despotic form.
Yeah.
The main thing they like to do is divide the people on the ground.
Mm.
They divide them on everything, divide them on sexual orientation, skin color, race, you name it. Because if they are divided, they are not going to, you know, to cool your behind out of power.
I hear you.
And now, the elephant in the room in relation to the Strait of Hormuz is stop bombing each other. The market will just stabilize and we're all good. But they are not doing that.
And also stop.
Do you need toiletries and household cleaners? You won't get it cheaper than a You Save up to the 7th of June. Get 250 mm jars of Vaseline for only $25. Smell fresh with Playboy roll-on deodorant for just $18.99. Get 2 kilograms of Surf's hand washing powder for just $49.99. Get 750 mm Sunlight dishwashing liquid for $28.99. And get 2 boxes of Cares Maxi sanitary pads for only $12.99. You Save. Where else?
Welcome back. So now, the point I made earlier is for me defending my fellow black people, including a bunch of dictators. You are also included in that. I want to be politically correct as possible. Okay, you know what? The stupidity in political decision making that you witness is I think it's one of those things that come with people being drunk on power. Because look, we are fighting to open a street that was open before the war started.
Okay, it's not us fighting.
No, it's not us.
We are praying and hoping as Africans.
You think I want to pay $15 for a taxi?
But you think one thing that you stated, especially Africa in addressing the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
You don't need to discuss with mouses or discuss with ground squirrel. The elephant is still standing there. When you address it, you deal with the main problem. Is that we know exactly what we need to do.
Yeah.
We know who is moving things. We know what we are not able to do.
Yeah.
But we are trying to be very, 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 not very diplomatic. We understand how diplomacy is working. Mm-hmm. But you are trying to not move things. You know, when I listen today, from the speech of the former minister of mines, for example.
Yeah.
No, it let me think to say, when people leave power, they start to have more clarity. Or is it because you don't have anybody to answer to? There's more clarity in that speech. I read it, I think, three times.
Yeah.
There's more clarity, and if you compare.
Oh, you read it. I watched it. He was the first one to speak, right?
Yeah, he was the first one to speak. And there's more clarity compared to what we've been doing around. Because if you go back, just, not 20 years ago, maybe 17 years ago, when he was a governor of Bank of Namibia.
Yeah.
He was in a different position. Very corporate, speaking on the system.
Yeah.
And deep down in a corporate language engagement.
Yeah.
But when you are outside and you are citizens, and I think we should listen to these people. It's the same thing I'm always telling people to say. A retired politician will give you a clear picture. It's the same thing that somebody who is on his last term or has nothing to lose will give you more picture than somebody who is within the system.
Yeah.
Because if we can just listen to what he has said, then we can learn a lot. Because with him, he gave an analysis and a comparison between what the banks need to do, what companies need to do, and what it means when that is not done.
My favorite part is for politicians. This is not the time for catchphrases. I was like, "Mame." Yeah.
No, he's my guy.
No, today.
The catchphrases.
Yeah. No, but you guys are right, because even in the UK sense, even in the American, US. In the US American sense, what was the guy that was Biden's press person? That Stephen, he's also a Stephen.
I'm thinking Stephen. About Stephen Miller.
Hmm. Yeah, because I keep thinking of Miller.
Yeah, I'm thinking about.
But it
Miller.
Looks similar to Miller.
The one that appeared on on a podcast just shortly after
and
leaving.
And
the
remember
office.
That story where he was asked, "Why did you guys say this?" But now you, and then he says, "Hey, listen, if you're in the job, you have to speak this. You have to speak this this lingo.
Look,
as opposed to what your heart and your mind tells you."
When he was representing the U.S. government, which is totally understandable, when he was representing the U.S. government, they kept asking him, "Is Israel committing war crimes?"
And he kept saying no.
But after leaving the office, he said, that's when you have this complete opposite with regards to what he's saying, that, well, it's possible.
Yeah.
Now, the question I was asked, you couldn't say that when you were at the podium. I was like, no.
But you know, the other thing that they should do, especially people with power, you can be politically correct. in front of the public.
And lose your salary?
But I want to make a point. You can be politically correct, like
economically marginalize yourself.
not to the extent of marginalizing yourself
economically.
And then societally.
No, politically correct in terms of diplomacy, there is always this face because you have a very strong capitalist system that has budget 20 times or 500 times than your country. Then you are into business with these people. You also don't want to chase them away. But at least move things. If that office was, say, today, was already done 5 years ago, we would not be here. Just to say, financial sector, open up. If you are not able to fund the informal sector already now, how are you going to fund the businesses that are going to operate in the oil and gas industry? If it's already difficult now, looking at the financial inclusion, looking at upgrading smaller businesses that have been around. Because if you go back to 10 years ago, ask yourself a question to say, how many SMEs in Namibia were upgraded to the next level? And how many of them become regional cooperation, not even multinational cooperation.
Then you realize. Just into SADC.
Yeah, just into SADC.
I can only think of one company.
Then if you think of one, we have none.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if you have that track record, maybe something has been done. Just to say, but today to say the financial sector must open up, fund, but don't fund irresponsibly. That is exactly what I say. To say, I'm not saying we should dictate what they need to do, but they have to be part of the game.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we are going to be watching through the window when the oil tanks are going. And there's nothing that you can do.
Well, we technically won't be able to see them.
No, even if you look at them, you will see that these are coming from Namibia, but you cannot do anything because your policies are not in order. Your financial sector is very small.
Your laws are not in order.
Your investment, even your upfront, Your biggest investment is 10%, and you can't get anything from the food chain, from that value chain. There is this new way that is coming out. We are going to benefit from a value chain, but there's always somebody who's
they love throwing distribution channel management terminologies in.
We are going to benefit from a value chain. But how can you benefit from a value chain if the FDI for 2025, even for this year, which made us number one in Africa again, is that it's static to say the investment in Namibia are going to be above $2 billion. Whose money is that?
Okay, here's the thing.
Until 2030, it's going to be above $2 billion US dollars.
So that means for every year, there's going to be continuous $2 billion investments into Namibia.
If I was a witch, I would have witched. I would have wished whoever is doing this FDI measurements.
Yeah.
One thing, I think one thing that they are leaving out, these guys that are measuring this, all this kind of, economic potential.
Yeah.
In relations to countries like Namibia.
Yeah.
They're just looking at things like your FDI or, your GDP and all that and saying, you know what, this country is doing well. Y'all are forgetting one thing.
Yeah.
We are very unequal. That means, yes, the resources, those numbers are obviously showing one very painful reality.
Yeah.
The resources is there. We are just terrible at sharing the resources.
No, that's why I still believe we need to have a dole, basic income grant.
You know what that means?
Yeah.
Basically
that thing that David said. What was that thing you mentioned? The conditional grants? But it shouldn't be there like permanently.
Yeah,
it should be there, David. Because let's say, for example, you go to work, ne?
Yeah.
Your salary is your salary. But you know, every once in a year, just for you being a Namibian, you get a cash payment.
Yeah, but you know,
we must be like
one thing that
like the Arabs,
our ancestors failed as they failed to understand the capitalist system before it came. They failed to understand how the finance is working. That's one thing that I think we should forgive them in the future, not understanding how the capitalism system is working.
I forgave them a long time. I think I forgave them a long time ago because. Systems like that is one of those things that were basically cordoned off in terms of education because you needed to reach a certain level of education for you to understand the concepts that makes the whole system run.
Yeah.
And they were not afforded that possibility.
Yeah.
Now, fast forward to post-independence, we got all the wrong PhDs
that do not have, employment opportunities in Africa.
Yeah.
And now we are being interviewed on African Affairs out of Berlin.
I hear and you know, if you just to support your point, to say we got all the PhDs that they only depend on the system that cannot innovate on their own. It's the example I gave again of Zimbabwe to say, when you hit the capitalist system, you just hit the capitalist system to say, no, I'm not going to give you money, I'm going to sanction you. All these academically trained people, they will run away to the system itself so that they can benefit to the system.
Yeah.
Because intellectual jump into the plane the first time they see that the economy is not working. Mm-hmm. But just to make
it. They're the first ones that leave.
They're the first ones that leave. Yeah. But just to put it in short is that to say, where we are going, the discussions must not be every day. Let us look at the impact.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the discussion, we just become so fancy. This thing has been there. To say it cannot be correct, this inequality is going to swallow all of us.
Yeah.
Because no one is safe, even the rich of the richest. If the gap of inequality become wider,
yeah.
You don't need to be an economist to know.
Yeah.
To say by nature people will try to survive.
Yeah.
Then even the fight will start within the marginalized.
No, but that had begun.
Yeah.
That scenario did happen after COVID. Just before COVID in 2019. The drought was so severe, David.
Mm-hmm.
People in Kommersdal and Rocky Crest, their homes were being broken into.
Yeah.
Because people just wanted to eat.
Even the investigator, when it's coming to investigate, will also take something home.
Yeah.
Because the system itself.
They didn't steal anything of value.
Yeah.
They just wanted. The one lady explained to me, the people just wanted food.
Yeah.
That's how hungry people were.
Yeah.
And we responded a whole 2 years later with the cash grant. What's that thing? The food bank system.
The food bank.
Yeah.
No, the question is that is the same thing that we have spoken about, to say continue giving a fish rather than teaching a person how to fish. You can give a lot of food.
Yeah, because
if
climate change hits the river and the fish resource dries up, now what must you do now?
No, it's a good analysis. But the question is that will they open up so that we can accommodate everybody? Because ask yourself now a question to say, how can a marginalized person in Opuo, deep down the mountains, going to benefit from oil and gas in Namibia? There is a very long way for that person to get benefit.
For the money to trickle down from your
not even, even a sustainable business in oil and gas, that is not even a dream, because the dream of this person is survival for now.
Yeah.
To say, how can a marginalized person in Omaheke, in Kavango, in Zambezi, in Omsati,
in Oshana,
Ovatwe, and any other person can benefit from oil and gas? Because if the successful business people in Namibia are already struggling to benefit from oil and gas,
What what guarantee do you as the ordinary person have to drive a...
No, they are not. Even if you look at the conference, we are trying our best. We are not.
Mm.
We don't have a key player. Mm. Maybe Kati, I don't know. maybe him. Maybe him is maybe he's a student.
Yeah.
Maybe knowledge Kati is a student.
Yeah.
Other than that, I don't know who is really there.
Well,
apart from But let's see.
Well, to be fair, the man's name is Knowledge, so be careful of the, give your kids the right names.
Yeah.
And,
He does have a lot of knowledge about the sector.
Yeah.
Just to be fair.
No, somebody was, was praising him again, but let's look at the
I don't want to push it to the point where I have an invoice for Monica. just have a few seconds left to saying goodbye. So for me, I want to say happy breastfeeding week, people, and goodbye.
What? Is that what we're leaving with, David?
Let's focus, colleagues, focus.
Bye. See each other again, same time, same place.